Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Russell's four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck your law. Big dirty tricorder.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I want one to sign. Just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
A good sports story here on Low Blow. So let's get it kicked off with something that may have gone under the radar unless you're a big fan of American sports this week, and it's a great sports story. So basically, I want to tell you about, if you don't follow college basketball, and I imagine a lot of people don't, every year they do something called March Madness, which is how they decide the college basketball champions. And it's much like more exciting and unpredictable than, say, the NBA playoffs, because in the March Madness, it's one game. So, like, and in basketball, any team can be anyone in any game. As many of you will know if you follow The Last Dance, like, in the NBA playoffs, it's best of seven. So the best team usually wins, whereas this is known for having loads of upsets and people going on runs and stuff like that. Really exciting stuff. And I followed it because it's the pandemic, and what else have we got to do but follow sports these days? I followed it this year in full, and my team became UCLA, who are historically great. They're like sort of, you could compare them to, say, Leeds or Nottingham Forest, and that they were great back in the 70s and 80s, and they have a great prestige and history, but they've fallen down quite a lot to the point that this year they barely made it in. They lost the last four games of the regular season, and they had to play in what's called the first four, which is like the first day of the tournament. It's like a qualification round where the worst teams in it. Anyway, they end up having a tournament of dreams where they go all the way to the semifinals, where they come up against the undefeated favorites of the tournament, Gonzaga, a team who have been undefeated the entire season, 30 games unbeaten, which is practically unheard of at this level of college basketball. And they had lost twice in the past two seasons. That's how good this program is. So it's a real, like, underdog story. And you're like, I've seen this before. Gonzaga are going to absolutely hockey to them. But at least they made it this far. No, they didn't. UCLA hung in there. Gonzaga at the end seemed like they might be pulling away, like, as it's coming towards the last few seconds. But UCLA keep pulling back until they eventually draw the game. It goes to overtime. In overtime, Gonzaga go 2 points up with 5 seconds to go. UCLA have 5 seconds to get 2 points to level it up. They go down the court. They take a shot. They miss the first shot, but the person who took it ends up grabbing the offensive rebound, getting a layup, and they draw the game again in overtime with 0.3 seconds left on the clock. So it's a draw. It's going to be a draw, and we're going to a second overtime, but it looks things. Nope. That's not what happened either, because then Gonzaga took the ball out. Jalen Suggs, who's been the MVP of the tournament, ends up running halfway down the court, and with 0.3 seconds left, fires off a shot from 40 yards. It goes in, and the entire season's over for UCLA. Gonzaga win. It is heartbreaking, but thrilling. It is like the closest in basketball I've ever seen to the Aguero moment, where it just ruined people's dreams in the very, very last touch of the game when everything looked like it was going that way. But absolutely thrilling stuff. So as we get kicked off here on a very special WrestleMania edition of Low Blows, the 299th episode of Low Blows, Rick Nash, Corporate Keen, and Katie Harvey in the house as always. Guys, what are moments in wrestling for you when just about everything changed in the very last second? Katie, we'll start with you.
I don't know if I understood the assignment, but have I ever told you the story about the world record attempt?
No.
So this, oh, okay, we're going back like 9-10 years now. It was only my second ever show in the UK. And I was like very new, very green. And basically I was booked to be on this show in the UK, which had like a good mix of like established women's wrestling names. And then one of the women's wrestlers had a school and she was bringing lots of her students with her. So they're like, they were going to match up like an experienced person with a student. And it was going to be like a really, really good kind of learning experience of a show. On my way over to the show, I got a message to say that the trainer had had to pull out because she was sick and therefore she couldn't drive. So some of her students come as well. And I was like, we're just going to have to rewrite the card. Now, me being like one show under my belt in the UK, immediately went to panic stations because, you know, I've been thinking of my match for weeks now at this stage and all this. So I get there anyway, I've kind of calmed myself down. I was like, OK, I still have a whole day to plan a match here. And then I find out that a couple of other things had happened, like injuries and stuff. So, you know, the card was even smaller than it was supposed to be. So I start panicking again, not sure what's going to happen. So it turns out of the original 15 girls booked, there was only 4 of us at the actual show. So 15 girls supposed to be on the roster, 4 of us actually there. So they start scrambling, trying to call local girls, put together matches, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, look, can I just work with one of the girls here already and we'll work out our match, blah, blah, blah. So that's fine. They paired me up with a girl. We start working out the match. Then the promoter comes up to me and this is like 2 hours out from the show and I'm so green as grass. And he just goes to me like, look, we think we have a solution for this. And I was like, what? And he goes, can you work an hour and 20 minutes? I went, what? And he goes, what we're going to do is we're going to turn this into an attraction and we're going to have you try break the record for longest wrestling match in the UK. And that's going to be the gimmick. And I went, I have been wrestling like fucking a wet day. Like I'm wet behind the ears here. I was like, and I started to panic. Now the other girl, right, just goes, look, I think she's a little bit new to be doing something like that. We can work something else out. Mm. But of course, me being brand new, I was like, no, you know what? I can do an hour. but luckily, the more experienced person was like, we'll come up with another plan. So in the end, it ended up being, they ended up putting up together like a mini tournament with the 4 of us there. And then I think they got 2 other girls who were local to come in and do a slightly longer match. But it was just one of them, it was just my first experience of, and I've had loads of them since, where you think you have a roster and a card and then something small happens, like that trainer getting sick and not being able to bring like herself and her car, and like it's just like everything changes. And I mean, my match changed like 17 times that day, but it was such it was such a good learning curve on one hand, but on the other hand, I don't know if I've ever being as stressed at a show than being asked, can you do an hour and 20 minutes to break a Guinness World Record?
I love that promoter's like optimism where he's like, you know what, maybe this is the perfect storm. I've always looked at that record and thought, one day I'm gonna get you, and now life has given us lemons, let's make lemonade. But yeah, no, probably best cooler heads did prevail though. Like, again, that'd be like, she'd be charging double her rate, guys, like if she was Guinness World Record holder Katie Harvey. So
never thought of that. Never thought of that.
Corporate Keen, moments where everything changed in the very last second.
Oh, I think there's only one answer to this, in like if we're talking like WWE and stuff like that. I actually watched it today when I thought of it, because it's just so cool. You know, WrestleMania 31 when Randy Orton turns the curb stomp into an RKO, and it's just in 1 second, the whole match is just, like, I think this is the most appropriate answer to the question. Like, yes, literally a split second, it's just on its head and that's it. Like, and the funniest part is, because I haven't really watched this since it happened, but when I watch it today, like, Randy Orton does it and then celebrates for like an hour. It's like he forgets to just go for the pin. He's just like, yes! And I don't blame him. Like, it was the coolest. It's probably the best RKO. It's like that and the Evan Bourne one are like the 2 best RKOs ever. Like, it's fucking unreal. Yeah, so that's my answer. Yeah,
he was all of us in that moment where, like, if we did that, we'd be like, oh. It's like when you score a goal from your own box in FIFA and you just sprint around the room, like, and it's like, Randy, you're at WrestleMania. Oh shit, yeah. I was thinking a bit more cynical, and I suppose that's me. That's my gimmick. So I was thinking of the Grapple Games match, one of the most perfect matches you've ever seen on the history of this island. Like, everything went into play. Like, it is Valkyrie's big moment to shine. And like, look, again, when you look at the results that came from that match and where she is now, it arguably, you know, it did its job still. There was no long-term damage from this, but it was her moment to shine. The big build-up, Fight Factory had come back. We were getting like record houses in the Big Sean, and this was the moment that everyone was waiting for. There had been multiple podcasts done specifically around this very match, building it up. And there was, we're getting towards the final stretch. Fans are already like, match of the year, there you go, match of the year. And then they hit it, the finish, the refs counting it, it's just 1, 2, well, and everyone's just like, you could hear the deflation. But still, an amazing match worth watching, and made arguably more memorable as a result of the finish. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not necessarily...
That's our explode and death match moment. Is what that was.
Yes, yes. Head of the game. That's it.
It really was. Guys, big week, obviously, in the world of wrestling. You're joining us halfway through the North Circular Road to WrestleMania. We're smack bang in the middle of the road to WrestleMania. Where cars are flying everywhere. We're just ducking and diving out of the way, trying to enjoy it all and take it all in. We're going to be breaking down the half of the week of the road to WrestleMania so far. I'm previewing the other half so far still to come. But obviously, it's low blows. And before the show, we started off, we were playing some old WrestleMania hype videos that we had. It's the first one we ever had in Woolshed, for example, and the first one we ever did in Buskers, and we're kind of getting in the mood ourselves, because despite the fact, and that's been one thing, because in 9 years since we started the first ever WrestleMania party in Captains, which was only supposed to be a one night gig, we've realized, oh wait, there's a lot more to this than maybe meets the eye. Corporate King, just to put it into perspective, 9 years ago, like WrestleMania 28, okay, because you won't remember 9 years, but you'll remember the WrestleMania. What was your life at WrestleMania 28?
Okay, bit you've chosen a bad one, because I actually don't remember 28.
Okay.
I was in a gap where I wasn't watching wrestling between like 26, I think, to okay. Like 30. I was back at 30 then.
Right, so 30, but like describe your life and what were you doing? Were you in school? Were you like,
well, WrestleMania, what school 30 were you in? Minus two, I would have been in first year. I would have been starting secondary school. Yeah, yeah. If I could do the maths, yeah, that's I don't actually even know where to, like, I don't know where to begin. Yeah, I would have been 13 then if I was in first year.
I love it.
Yeah, completely, like, completely different than now, because like I was too cool to watch wrestling, you know what I mean? Like, wrestling was embarrassing. I was oh, you think I'm gonna watch wrestling? Hardly. That's rear view mirror for me, pal. I'm like, I'm moving on to bigger and better things.
amazing. Yeah, but that's to put it into perspective, like, that's Corporate Keen, who this week launched a Patreon. That was how old he was when the first party was. And kind of, yeah, just to kind of give you that perspective.
What's holy that? Shit, I didn't even think. I was 13, so like, if I showed up to the first party, would you let me in? Like,
well, like, did you hear about like the kind of sub party we ran a week later, where Nathan McDonough, he told this story on the show before, was the only person who showed up. It was like a video games night ahead, like preview before like WWE were in Tree Arena, and he was the only person who showed up with his mom, and his mom made complaints because we said there'd be a party, and I'm like, it's not my fault. There was a plan to have a party. But that's how long we've been going on now. And and I always say we did have to fight for our rights to have a party. WWE at one stage tried to shut us down when they started running parties over in the UK themselves. They put in a cease and desist, and that's how we went from being WWE Parties Ireland to Low Blows Wrestling Parties. The guards literally shut us down mid-party before, in the middle of Roman Reigns' entrance at number 30. And like, now this year, like 9 years later, as we prepare for our 9th WrestleMania party. We're in the middle of a fucking global pandemic, and yet here we are getting ready for another WrestleMania party, and we cannot wait. We're making it our own. We're making it our first ever two-night WrestleMania from home spectacular, and it is going to be awesome. We've got pretty much a lot of the announcements out there now, so you guys pretty much know what's coming if you've been following on social media. If you haven't, don't worry. On Saturday night, what we're going to do is both parties, by the way, on Zoom from 8 p.m., so you can just chill in your gaff and then get into the WrestleMania mood as you would. Crack some cans if that's what you do to celebrate WrestleMania. Get whatever food you want in and then just chill and get the Low Blows atmosphere. And Saturday night we're going to have a special live edition of Ask Low Blows, including thank you Keith Hanley, who provided the WrestleMania World Cup and all of your questions. So please guys, get the questions in. We have some already, some excellent ones, but we want, this is a WrestleMania special, so we want your very best questions, your most random questions, your WrestleMania themed questions, like whatever you want to ask us, you guys are in control. We're going to be doing that to get kicked off. Then we're going to have the return of our WrestleMania Kahoot table quiz. Very competitive when we did this for the Royal Rumble, but I think a lot of people had a lot of fun, and I've got a fair few ideas for new rounds that we're going to be introducing. So that's going to be the crack. Then we're also going to have, like last time at the Royal Rumble party, people won money. People walked away from the Rumble party in profit last time after our Royal Rumble raffle. We're going to have a similar competition next week where... this weekend, where we're going to be doing our WrestleMania pick'ems. So guys, if you want to get on eventbrite.ie, tickets are a fiver, but we don't get any money from that. But the winner gets the pot. Put it that simply. We're all going to be entering and the winner gets the pot. We're going to be doing score updates throughout WrestleMania. And then you can just hang out in the chat while WrestleMania is on and talk to people, so we can at least feel like we're around each other and watching it and reacting as we would if we're in Buskers. Then on Sunday night, we have our very first ever, and I cannot wait for this. We're bringing in something brand new. We're going to be having our WrestleMania Rewind special, where we're going to play classic matches from WrestleMania's past in the chat, in the Zoom, so you can get into the buzz and get nostalgic. But what we're going to do on top of that is we're going to get some, and I am so happy with the lineup we have. It's a who's who of Irish wrestling past and present. We're going to be seeing those classic matches through their eyes and seeing how it made the professional wrestlers into what they are today. These are matches that influenced them either before their career started or during their career. These are matches that mean the most to them. They have been handpicked by the Irish wrestling scene, including our own Katie Harvey's going to be there. She's going to be picking one match. We've Phil Boyd as well. He's going to be back. We announced last week the Heretic Red Vinnie, an Irish Wrestling Hall of Famer, if there was an Irish Wrestling Hall of Fame, is going to be joining us on Zoom for that. We have the Ballymun Bruiser, Terry Thatcher, we have Justy, we have Jay Money, we have Jerry, we have Owen Richards. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be class. It's going to be great crack. And I think it's going to be what we need, because, again, on the second day of a weekend, you're just like kind of chilling out. You're getting your comfies and you're just like, right, let's do this and let's just have a laugh. So please join us if you can, guys. And we hope to give you the WrestleMania experience. Hopefully this time next year, we'll be back in Buskers and doing it like we always have. But this year, I think we're going to have an amazing, amazing two-night party. So I hope you can join us. Tickets available for on eventbrite.ie or for free if you're a Patreon subscriber. So guys, get all over that. It's going to be class. Anyway, guys, busy show coming up this week. Like I said, we're going to be talking through the half of the week, the half of WrestleMania week that's already happened, and we're going to be previewing the other half as well as talking about the news. But because Corbett Keane, Katie Harvey, are you ready to go?
Yeah,
sure.
Let's do this. WrestleMania special, guys. And we're going to get kicked off, as we always do, with the news, because it's time for...
Queen versus King.
Queen versus King, because my two co-hosts are very good friends, but they're also even better enemies. So what we do to discuss the biggest stories of the week is we put 30 seconds on the clock, take the top five news stories of the week, and then we give points for punditry. We ask for my co-host hot takes on it, on the big stories, and we give out points. We've been keeping score for the year, of course, as a lot of you will know. Keane has roared back since returning to Low Blows. He's taken a 6-5 lead, but it is still tied at the top. So Katie, you have every opportunity to level it up here. Just, you got to bring your A game because this is going to be a big week. It's WrestleMania week. Katie, you are up first. 30 seconds on the clock. And the first question is, it was revealed this week that the next guest on Stone Cold Steve Austin's Broken Skull Sessions will be none other than AEW star Chris Jericho in a hotly anticipated interview airing directly after WrestleMania on Sunday. But what's the one question you want Stone Cold Steve Austin to ask Jericho more than any other?
So I feel like we know Chris Jericho a lot from his podcasts and his books. So what I would want is Stone Cold to ask Jericho, can we see your search history on Google? Because I think that is how you find the true measure of a person. And I want to know exactly what research Jericho did before going back for this interview. And I also want to just find out what weird shit he's looking up, because everyone's got a few weird searches. And I think it's one thing that nobody has ever asked Jericho to do.
Okay, amazing. I thank God people don't ask that on Ask Low Blows. So don't be giving them ideas, Katie. Corporate Keen, what's the one question you want Austin to ask Jericho?
It is kind of an obvious one, but I really want them to ask why there's a race car noise in his WWE theme. You know, where it goes, break the walls down, you know, it's there, it's in the background, listen back. He's never explained why. He's never shown love for cars prior to the song or after it. And he's blocked people on Twitter, such as Keith Hanley, for asking this question. So I would like him to answer it, because he can't block Austin in person.
Amazing stuff. That's a tough one, because I do want to know what Jericho's search history is, but also as well, I think, Keen, you've tapped on something, a historical question that he refuses to address. You know, it's Chris Jericho's version of like the Macho Man Stephanie McMahon rumors. It's like, what is it? Why is it there?
What if Jericho's search history is, why is there a race car in
the Who knows? You have to tune into the WWE Network to find out. Or Peacock. Okay, amazing stuff. I'm going to give the point to Corver Keen, but it was very, very close one there. Question two. In a story that he since recanted and said that wasn't actually the case, Dave Meltzer claimed that an NXT talent were told in a meeting with Triple H last week that they were bullied off their own Wednesday night by the competition and things will be better on Tuesdays. But what 30-second motivational speech would you give to the NXT roster ahead of the move, Keen?
Superstars, that was just the battle. That was the warm-up. This is the war. We are going head-to-head this time. Finn, you've got Trevor Murdoch. Cole, you've got Tyrus. Ciampa, you've got Darren Young. This is as real as it gets. NXT versus NWA. If we don't operate on our A game, the Pope, who you may remember as Elijah Burke, will steal our jobs and our TV time.
Amazing stuff. Amazing. Katie.
I would have to take inspiration from that great wrestling leader, Dixie Carter, when she sat down the entire TNA roster on camera before an impact to give them the succinct message, which I think is deserved here, that they either get behind the direction or find somewhere else to go work. Hardball them. Give them a hard line to work against. I mean, it worked for Dixie Carter. So, I mean, history is on our side here.
Oh, fuck.
You can't argue, yeah. Corbin can't even concede there. You can't argue with the success of Dixie Carter in the professional wrestling industry. Point to Katie. We're tied at one apiece. Question three. The Andre the Giant Battle Royal has been moved to SmackDown before Mania instead of being a part of WrestleMania itself. Is this a good move to keep everything on Mania essential, or is it harsh denying wrestlers in a WrestleMania payday and a chance to wrestle in front of fans again? Katie.
I would be snapping if I was the people in the Andre the Giant Battle Royal, because it's a two-day Mania. We are going 7 to 8 hours and they cannot fit a match that was designed for WrestleMania on an extended WrestleMania. I would feel so hard done by. It's so harsh, and I can't believe, like, I just would hate to have been the messenger delivering that message to people, like, who've been hyped and probably have their special WrestleMania gear ready. You know, it's heartbreaking. No, it's way harsh.
I just think of Ali backstage, and it's like, you know what, Ali, obviously we have WrestleMania today, this year on Saturday and Sunday. You will be wrestling on the Friday.
it's awful. I hate it.
Keen, is this harsh or is it better?
I love it. WWE's go home shows are shit. What I view this as is, instead of a go home show, it's an extended WrestleMania. It's the Sunday night heat. It's the prelims that get you hype beforehand. And it makes WrestleMania shorter. And they still get paid. They'll see fans again. Like, I know Katie's like snapping because, oh, they didn't get to like, they didn't get their big Mania moment. Like, Katie, you haven't wrestled at all since the pandemic started. You know what I mean? There's so many wrestlers in worse positions. It's not the end of the world. Like, they'll be back. I think it's great. It makes SmackDown better and it extends WrestleMania. I like it.
Okay, look, I'm going to give the point to Keane on that one. I like the optimistic outlook, and you'll always get points when you go directly at the other person.
Yeah, I'm thinking of me there like, what the fuck have you done in the last year?
Always good in this. It is a competition after all, so 2-1 Keane. Question 4, in an interview with Ariel Helwani, Roman Reigns claimed he would smash anyone, including Daniel Cormier, leading to the two beefing on Twitter. Thinking of the likes of Cain Velasquez, MMA crossovers of sometimes been hit and miss in WWE in the past, but would Reigns versus Cormier be something you'd like to see in the future, Keane?
No. Of 1,000 dream matches with this current iteration of Roman Reigns, none of them involve celebrities, mixed martial artists, or non-wrestlers of any kind. There's been one good MMA to wrestling crossover. It was Mauro Ranallo. And I've no interest in any further MMA crossovers, despite being a massive MMA fan. I would love Cormier on commentary, though. I do love him. I mean, it'd be great to see him have fun, but I want to see Reigns against Walter. I want to see Reigns against, you know what I mean? Like a whole list of other people instead, you know?
Is that Keen going out? Katie, can you hear me?
Oh yeah.
What is that Keen going out? Okay, right, Keen. Your internet may have screwed you there.
Oh, are you messing?
Yeah, no, I got you there. Yeah, I got about half of that and your time is up. So Katie,
fantastic. Yes.
Open goal.
Okay, I don't know who Cormier is, right? But I am going to say that I would like to see this because I understand that other people like MMA and I do understand that sometimes these things can be exciting. I mean, let's take Bad Bunny. I'm a Bad Bunny fan now. He could be the new Bad Bunny. So I'm all for it.
Oh, there's no way. Even half of mine was better than that. Come on. Like.
On Corber. One hand, I could barely hear anything Corber Keane said. On the other, you called him Cormier. And then you said Cormier could be Bad Bunny, but I could hear you. So it is technically an answer. So I have to give it to Katie by default, but I would like the record to say it is default. Sending us to question 5, Katie, an important one for you. So you don't go down 2 points in the weekly battles. WWE announced a partnership with Cameo last week for limited messages from WWE superstars, with Randy Orton and Shane McMahon costing the most at $500 a pop, while poor Omos is the lowest at a measly 150. If I gave you $1,000 though, what cameos would you pick from the list?
This is easy. First cameo, Shane McMahon. Instruct him to say that I have a job at WWE for life. Second cameo, again, Shane McMahon. Instruct him to say that the first cameo was not a mistake and is in fact a legally binding contract. Then I would pack my bags and I would see you later because I'm off to Tampa.
Ah, fuck.
Strong. Corver Keane.
Oh, bollocks. Mine was actually to basically get Omos 6 times on Cameo so we can actually have a conversation, albeit a very expensive conversation, $150 every time he speaks. But still, he gets 6 cameos. I get a conversation with one of my favorite wrestlers on Raw, and I've got $100 spare then for Pringles, so I don't have an extra 50 for another cameo of Omos.
The correct answer I was looking for was 1,000 Phil Boyds. However, I feel Katie's was very creative. So point to Katie. Katie, in spite of it all, you win the week. And you won a week, including calling Daniel Cormier Cormer.
I can't believe she won that one. That's bollocks.
So well done. Back in the game. We are tied at 6 apiece heading into Loblaw 300 next week. Anyway, guys, it's time to talk about the in-ring from the week. The good and the bad, starting with the bad, because, ladies and gentlemen, it is time.
Say something stupid.
Worst moments of the week. In at number 5, let's talk about the Hall of Fame.
So I think there was a lot to like about the Hall of Fame, which we'll talk about later. But one thing that kind of threw me off and I didn't love was the actual layout of the Hall of Fame. And what I mean by that is they made such a big deal of like the WWE superstars arriving on the red carpet in all their finery, you know, ready to celebrate. But then what bothered me is when the people were actually making their induction speeches, like they were just in the Thunderdome by themselves. And I don't really understand where the audience was, like where the superstars were, because I think one of the things I love about the Hall of Fame is I love seeing like them interact with each other, like kind of outside of wrestling, you know what I mean? Like who's sitting together, like laughing and joking. And there's just that little bit more connection with the speeches because they're looking at their friends, they're looking at their peers. And you always get those like emotional moments where like standing ovations and claps and stuff, you know? And I just feel like that was kind of missing the way they did it. Like obviously they're all being tested for COVID regularly. They've all been wrestling each other. I don't see an issue if they had just set out like a comedy club, if they had a set out tables with like three or four people per table, you know, have the Thunderdome there as well. That's cool. But I didn't really like the kind of layout of the whole thing. I just thought it was a little bit impersonal, you know, especially when you put it on top of like no inductor speeches and like timed induction speeches. It just felt a little bit clinical rather than kind of like, you know, lovely Hall of Fame.
100%. And it was something that I don't think you could watch the Hall of Fame without wondering that. You know what I mean? Because it's like we have the red carpet there and now we have Kevin Patrick interviewing all these people and you have like the women in particular are dolled up, like, you know what I mean? They've probably paid hundreds for their makeup and their dresses and stuff like that as well. And it's like if you're expecting me to believe that this is all happening like at the same time, do they like get dressed up and then just all hang out in catering, or like do they have to get dressed up and like they've had to do this like before Raw or SmackDown, and then like Kevin Patrick has been like the past 4 days of the week just like in a tux going, isn't tonight gonna be amazing?
Oh, that makes it even worse thinking of it like that, you know. I like to think, but that's what I couldn't understand as well, because I was like, what if they're all just backstage sitting together? What is the point in that? Why not just put them out? Like,
if you've decided this is safe and it's safe to have them all there, why not have them like just be an audience? Like, it was so weird.
It was definitely odd. Like, it was definitely odd.
Yeah, like I wouldn't look. I understand they're dealing with the pandemic. It won't be like this every year. It's not a dramatic shift change for the Hall of Fame. There were some positives and we'll talk about that, but like, yeah,
remember Legend Night where they were all sitting on the ramp together and there was like 15 of them.
Yeah.
Like that's basically all they needed to do, and they could have spaced them out even more, you know, like at the little tables. It just felt like kind of a wasted opportunity to give some semblance of normality, like while still working within their own guidelines.
Yeah, there's no need. It was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. But again, you know, I'm not gonna kill anyone for COVID regulations and kind of getting it wrong. They're all kind of playing a guessing game, and it'll be back to normal next year. But yeah, you couldn't watch it and not get that impression at the same time. It was nuts. In at number four, want to talk about NXT last week. So this was actually a really good concept. They basically did originally when they announced it, I didn't like it. They were gonna do a battle royale, so they have a gauntlet eliminator tonight on NXT TakeOver Stand and Deliver, and it's the last six people from this battle royale qualified for the Gauntlet Eliminator. But I hate battle royales that just like it's to get like the New Japan one at Wrestle Kingdom this year, the last four people were in a four-way the next night, and it was like you know, the battle royale just ends. That's what I thought they were doing originally, but then they made it even cleverer where they're like, no, like the order you're eliminated in, if you even get to the last six, determines what order you'll enter the Gauntlet Eliminator in. So I'm like, right, okay, so everything's like it actually ends. There's a firm winner this match, and they've got something to play for, and they've got something to compete for even after they've qualified. So it all matters. It's all important. And it's actually much more engaging than a normal battle royale, because usually it's just, well, there's the winner and everyone else can fuck themselves. Like, it's actually like, no, the top six, it matters where they win, where they get eliminated. Good idea in theory, but there was a lot of just stupidity from people in the battle royale. Now, the first one, it was deliberately stupid. It's part of his gimmick. It's Austin Theory. Got eliminated from it and realized that like his feet hadn't touched the floor because he's holding on to the top rope. Or no, sorry, he's sitting on the apron and his feet haven't touched the floor, and he's like, oh shit, I'm actually okay. So he decides to lie down on the ground, and you think, is he gonna like kind of angle himself back to the ring steps or something like that? But instead he goes, no, I know what I'm gonna do, and he nips up and he's like, nip up, and then the ref's like, no, you're gone. And that was like a funny enough spot and creative, but there was a lot of people where they weren't the joke wasn't that they're supposed to be stupid, but they were still acting really stupid. So LA Knight has been feuding with Bronson Reed since he joined NXT, and that's kind of been like the, where they've paired him off. And obviously Bronson Reed's got the who's going to eliminate that guy. That's his role in this battle royale. So everyone kind of teams up and gets him over the top rope, but he's kind of hanging onto the ropes and he's still sitting there. Kushida does like a kind of handstand thing where he like handstand elbow and stuff on him. So like he's withering. And then instead of like eliminating his foe and arguably his toughest competition, LA Knight decides to attack Kushida instead and just like starts doing generic battle royale stances. So like it's like he's on the ropes, like why would you not go for him? There's just no logic for what he's doing. And I'm willing to bet LA Knight in the match was like, in real life I would have attacked him, like why am I doing this? But it was just stupid and it just raised so much questions because it was so obvious. And then Kushida again just randomly at one stage got pissed off with Pete Dunne. Now it made sense because after, as soon as that like this happened, like 5 minutes later they announced they were wrestling one-on-one at like at TakeOver, and that's the opener, and it's going to be a good match too, so you can't be too angry with it. But at one stage Kushida just went apeshit at Dunne, grabbed him by the arm, then like threw himself, they both threw each other over the top rope in the meanwhile just because he was so angry. First off, there was no real build to that, like obviously there has been tension between the two and that's kind of the culmination of it, but there was no real build to that. And then there was no reaction from either of them either, like Kushida's outside and he just gets him in his little arm hold and it's like, you've just lost, like I don't give a shit. So when they announced the match 5 minutes later, it's like I'm just looking at two dumbasses are wrestling on Wednesday night and it's like I don't give a fuck, they're idiots now. But yeah, no, just people behaving stupidly in the battle royale, there's no need. You can do all that you want to do, but you can just come up and think for 2 more seconds and come up with a more fun way to do it. In at number 3, let's talk about GCW.
So this happened like a week ago. It is actually happened literally the second we were finished the podcast. I saw it on Twitter. I was like, ah, could have talked about it. But So GCW, if you don't know, are like kind of like the, I think they're the biggest indie in America or like around that anyway. And they do a lot of shows on WrestleMania week called The Collective. And like, it's basically like they give, my understanding of it is they give kind of individual wrestlers their own show to promote and kind of run. So like Joey Janela's Spring Break and Josh Barnett, Bloodsport, and you know, things like that. There's this other lad that's doing one called For the Culture, and he put a thing about it on Twitter, and he said, can people actually buy tickets to my show? Because for some reason, no one ever wants to, even though somehow I think of really wild matches you couldn't think of on Fire Pro. And then a fan, like, I thought, like, oh, that's a bit odd. And then a fan responds, and it's like, oh, it's the night, like, this is, I've got the sort of tweets here. It's like, oh, yeah, it's the night, it's on, good sir. And he's like, yeah, someone else can do this next time. And he's like, and the fan's like, no, I'll buy one, but I'm not in town until Friday. And he's like, nah, it's cool. No one ever says this about Bloodsport. Like, someone else can do it. I'm not stressing over this next time. And it was like, and the fan's like, oh, I purchased it just to support. I'm like, first of all, that fan is being way too nice. Way too nice to this lad. I literally... like if I don't want to pay to go to your show, unlucky. Like it's because I don't want it. I don't owe you an explanation. But I just like it. Like you're blaming fans for the reason your tickets aren't selling. Like this. So the GCW Collective shows, right? If you ever look at like who goes to these shows, like it's obviously the hardcore fans. You know what I mean? The international fans, the ones who travel all around the world to WrestleMania, so they can, you know, they make a week out of it and they go to all the indie shows as well as Mania. They love it. They have a laugh. But I'm starting off on a very obvious point, but like because of the pandemic, none of those fans are going to be there, you know what I mean, for a start. So that's already point number one. That's the main reason, like initially you're not going to have many tickets, right? Then you've got fans in America who are like, well, I don't want this to be like, I'm not going to spend Mania week going to all these like super spreader fucking indie shows. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like we're in the middle of a pandemic and it's too risky. I don't want to do that. So he addressed that and he said, you know, that's fine if you don't want to, you know, if we're in the middle of a pandemic, you don't want to pay for a ticket to be there, then, you know, watch online, buy a virtual ticket, right? And like, do you want like this show, right, on its own? And I could have my numbers a little bit off. Do double check this. That's a disclaimer. I forgot to double check it. But just remembering from last week, the show cost $13 alone. Just this one show, $13, right? So it's not even like, okay, like you might think, oh, but a ticket is 20 or 30 and it's cheaper and you get, you know, whatever, but it's like, the thing is, right, when you're paying like $20 or $30 for like a ticket, or euro in our case for a ticket, you're paying for like the whole experience. You know what I mean? You're there with all your friends watching class wrestling, surrounded by this unbelievable atmosphere. You know what I mean? You get sucked in. It's not just like what's happening in front of you. You know what I mean? Compare that to like sitting in, on your own in your box room, sweating into your onion rings while your parents argue about their divorce in the room next door. You know what I mean? It's not quite the same. It's not quite the same like atmosphere. You know what I mean? Like it's like the live experience versus watching on a screen. $13 for one show in 2020, not just 2021, just to clarify, like ever since on-demand services became a thing, ever since the network launched and all the indies have their own, you know, independent service, like that's like $13 for one show is quite an ask, you know what I mean? But here's the thing, right? It's part of the collective. It's part of a group of shows, right? And again, disclaimer, haven't double-checked it, but what I remember from last week is the price of every collective show put together, you know, as a bundle package, I don't know, it might be on Fight or whatever it is $140, right? So first of all, if you're a big hardcore GCW fan, even then you need to have like $140 to pay for all of these shows. Otherwise, you have to prioritize and some won't make the cut, yeah? But like, for the average fan who's like not necessarily into GCW and, you know, might be thinking of looking at like indie shows or whatever, like the biggest, now I could be wrong, but the biggest like indie wrestling sort of on-demand service in America, IWTV, they're like a tenner a month for like, these are the lads that have like Beyond Wrestling and things like that, like the those sort of promotions. And I think it's a tenner a month and 100 for a year. So $100 and you get like all the shows, all the promotions that they have for the whole year, yeah? Compared to $140 for like what, however many shows it is of the collective just over WrestleMania week, yeah? So that's just a bit, just for scale, just for perspective. So not only is it like, not only do you have fans that can't make shows, you also have this incredibly overpriced like model that like for me as a potential fan, it doesn't appeal to me personally. But then you also have to take into account like, indie wrestling's fucking dead. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying it'll never come back. I'm not saying like, you know, it's dead forever. But I mean, look at indie wrestling over the last year, right? Like, I watch, so here are the six promotions that I follow in America, right? WWE, AEW, Impact, Ring of Honor, MLW, NWA, right? So can you name for me any wrestlers based in America that I can't already watch in those promotions that aren't a deathmatch wrestler or aren't a comedy wrestler or a novelty act? Like, who's the next promising independent wrestler in America? I'm not saying there's none, but can you name them?
No.
Shit. I'm genuinely trying to think. No, I can't. No.
No, like the only people I can name that are like on the indies who I really want to see right now are Eric Redbeard and Allison Kay. Besides them, like, yeah, I'm sure there's a few, but nobody has sort of made a name for themselves over the last year. Nobody, like, everyone's gotten signed, and anyone that has been signed has been unable to replace that, like, you know what I mean, like those that left. So it's like, there's like indie wrestling in general doesn't have a big appeal anymore. I'm being honest, like it compared to like we're long past the 2017 2018 boom, we're gone through a pandemic and everybody's signed. So it's kind of like, for me personally, like on the outside looking in, I'm like, I don't really see what you would expect that many people to even be paying for the show to begin with. But then I read through all his tweets just to sort of understand what was his sort of line of thinking. Why did he think like this show deserves so much more tickets, and why did he like expect more from the fans? And it was basically, he's in his own Twitter bubble. Like, essentially people will like tweet and being like, oh, this show, can't wait to see it. It's going to be great. And he thinks that like all these people are then, you know, saying this to him, and then they're pirating the show. And that's his problem. He wants, you know, all these people pirating the show to pay for the show. But I think wrestlers, like, this is the thing, like, wrestlers are always going to blame piracy. Like, till the end of time, piracy will always have the finger pointed at it, because wrestlers aren't able to accept that perhaps it's the fact that this is a very low point for indie wrestling. Perhaps the wrestlers who are currently on the indies now aren't generating enough interest to stir up the ticket sales, you know what I mean? Like, and that the majority of people left on the indies are people who I can either see in other promotions. They're, you know, again, nothing against deathmatch wrestlers or comedy wrestlers, but, you know, there's just that little gap of like, who's the next big thing? Again, they're probably there. I'm not saying they're not there, but I don't know who they are because they haven't made a name for themselves yet. And it's kind of like, I don't know, I just think he's like blaming the fans. I just think he's got like, he's thinking that GCW is a much bigger deal than what it is. You know what I mean? Like, there's a decline, clearly. Like, I haven't heard the only thing I've heard of GCW over the last year, bearing in mind, I used to hear a lot about it. Like back in, like, again, 2017, 2018, 2019, people would be talking. People be talking about like Joey Janela spring break, and they'd be talking about all the crazy shit that's happening over the week. Nobody does that anymore. You know what I mean? Like, that's it's like all I've heard about GCW over the last year is like they ran shows during the pandemic and received a lot of criticism for it. And like, that's the only thing I've seen come out with GCW this past year. You know what I mean? So it's like, what bothers me the most is the fact that like he's going after fans. It's like the what I've seen over the last few months are like this whole shit of like fans sponsoring matches, sponsoring wrestlers, sponsoring shows, and I've seen like we've seen like even over here like fans donating thousands to their favorite promotion to keep them afloat. You know what I mean? Like fans, like to point a finger at the fans. You know what I mean? Like, and as like that, like that's insane to me. You know what I mean? As a non GCW fan, I see you being like, come on, pay for tickets. What are you paying for tickets? You stupid cunt. You know what I mean? Like, with them saying that to me, like the message that I get off it is like, your show mustn't be very good if you're guilt tripping me into buying it. If you have to guilt trip me into buying a ticket, then I get the impression that your show isn't very good, and it might be good, but the message you're telling to me is that it's not, because nobody, like, you don't publicly turn around and be like, ah, I guess nobody wants to buy our fucking show. It's like, what?
don't say it.
You know what I mean? I don't get what you're going for here. What do you want me to feel when I see this? Like, what? Like, I don't, like, I even had a look at the card, and again, it's like, I maybe if I had time, I'd consider checking it out, but not for like $13 or $140. You know what I mean? Like, Rich Swan, the Impact World Champion, somebody who I already watch every week as it is, taking on Too Cold Scorpio, a 55-year-old man. I'm sure it'll be a good match, but it's not like $13 good. It's not $100.
I think of ideas good. That nobody would think of.
Yeah, and I mean, like, no, there is some, like, I'm sure, like, some of the people, the names that I don't recognize, I'm in completely blindly, I'm going to assume that they're the future that these people are talking about, and I need to educate myself on who these people are. But like, again, I've heard no buzz surrounding them. I've heard no like, oh, you need to check this guy out or that guy out. You know what I mean? So I don't know why I would pay like this sort of money for GCW. And like, again, I wish no ill will. Like, I'd love if these shows absolutely banged, they were unreal, and like afterwards I was saying, man, I really wish I spent $140 on all of these shows because they were excellent, 10 out of 10. I don't have any ill will on any of the people putting these shows on. I hope they do unreal. But I can't support them if they're going to be this entitled. You know what I mean? Like, adjust your level of entitlement and then, you know, proceed and put on these good shows and build a buzz, and then we'll see what happens. But until then, it's not my fault that I don't want to fucking see it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely excellent rant there, and like, you're dead on every single point. And I feel that this is something that we're gonna see more, because now we are entering kind of a wrestling recession. Like, there is going to be somewhat of that because of the points you raised with how many people are signed, and particularly in America. Like, over here in Ireland, like, it's almost criminal some of the wrestlers that are left unsigned, like some of the people like Morten Hype and stuff like that they're still on the market and stuff. So I don't necessarily know if it's necessarily going to be as quick, as bad as it is in America. But in America, you're right in what you say. I'm still trying to think of one wrestler that I can't see on any of those, and that's the world that we're in, for better or for worse. And that's what comes with this, though. Like, and Katie, you've been through a couple of cycles of this, and you can probably think of examples of like times you've seen little rants like that and little excuses made and stuff, because I know I can, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is what happens when times get shit. And it's like, fans don't care. It's like, even remember the DCW owner like banging the ring post in a rant against the fans for not supporting Irish people, Irish promotions. Do you know that story, Keen? Yeah,
I don't think that was
before my time as well. I only came in at the tail end of DCW.
when DCW started to die out, one of the 350% promoters, I will never stop making that point.
I forgot about that. Yeah, 50%.
One of the 350% promoters put out a rant on the internet, on Bebo actually, ranting about the fans not supporting Irish promotions, where he picked up a spanner in the middle of it and started beating his ring post. All while like giving out for Irish people not supporting Irish products while wearing a Man United jersey. But like, that's what instantly came to mind here, where it's just like blaming the fans, and it's like, no, you're just
I think that like for me, blaming the fans is just an absolute sign of like it is the last straw to clutch. Do you know what I mean? Like you look back at like he said like oh, but the like and the pre-pandemic numbers were bad too. I'm like, well, yeah, because like it's the same situation even a year ago. You know what I mean? Like it's still indie wrestling. Everybody's signed, and those that aren't signed haven't made enough buzz for themselves yet. You know what I mean? So I don't know. We'll see what again. Like I do hope it goes down really well, but I don't know. Like
You know what's part of it, right? It's just the frustration as a promoter, because in the last 5 years especially, it's become so much more expensive to run shows. So that is a promoter dealing with their frustration in the wrong way. You know what I mean? Yeah. And look, shows should be more expensive to run because people should be getting fair wages. We should be spending money on graphics. We should be putting things out on VOD. Mm. And these are the things that a cost that weren't there 10 years ago to run a show. You know what I mean? So like there is certain frustrations that are specific to promoters, but the answer is not to alienate the fans who are going to give you money to then pay them costs for running your show. Like,
seriously, like oh sorry, I'll give you my $13. Sorry. You know what I mean? It's like the in-betweeners, you know what I mean? Where like grab your man by the throat, it's like bus wanker, yeah. It's like sorry.
And but we know as well that promotions don't have to spend thousands and thousands to put on an excellent wrestling show. Yeah. So it has to be just about people putting on good shows so people want to go watch them. Look, you might just have to say, I'm going to take a loss for a few shows to get some good matches on tape, to put online, to show people what I'm offering, and then lure them in that way. It's just, it's all that guilt tripping is just frustrated promoters not knowing how to promote their business. Yeah. So they're just lashing out at like the easiest targets for them, which is the fans, because they don't have to deal with the fans in a locker room. They don't have to, you know what I mean? They don't have to interact with them. It's ridiculous. It shouldn't be happening. I actually just went on Twitter and read the exact tweets that you were talking about, and I was just sitting there like in not just in wrestling, in what part of any business promotion, like do you think this is a good idea? You know what I mean? Like, imagine you're in Tesco and the fucking cashier starts screaming at you, the customer. You know what I mean? Because of something completely unrelated to you. I'm just imagining
Fight Factory, you know what I mean? Check out episode 14. Oh, what's that? You don't want to check out episode 14? Okay, fine then. Oh, we only have this amazing match in the main event. Oh, fine. No, if that's where you want to be, fine. We'll worry about it next time. Someone else can do it next time. Yeah. Fine, whatever.
Instead of investing my time and effort into, you know, engaging promos and like maybe an online advert or, you know, like some kind of interesting storyline in the build up to this show, I'll just scream at you. Oh my god, it's ridiculous.
It's tough, like, and you do, yeah, like if you're in a position, then you have to, you know, and like look at like Low Blows and stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, we'll probably lose money on WrestleMania Sunday or whatever, because, you know, we're not buskers, the appeal is going out and stuff like that, but it's like you just go, right, okay, so we won't make money or we'll lose money or whatever it is. We can eat and we'll just have a nice night, and then people will go, that was actually deadly, and then they'll tell their friends it's deadly, and you build back through goodwill. We've been through tough times, Katie. I know, like, Fight Factory has been through tough times, and how you get people back is by people going, oh lads, you just need to support this is really good and you're missing it, because they like you. But if you're telling them to fuck themselves,
could you imagine like, yeah, one of my videos doesn't do as well as I want, I just turn around there, I'm like, so why didn't you watch my fucking video then? Why didn't you watch it? No, fine, I just want to upload next week then. No, it's fine. No, don't need to watch it. Who cares? Like, there's so many examples in so many different areas where like that's a direct parallel, and you just realize how stupid it is. Like, what is the thought process behind this? Like,
kid. Make a Patreon advert like that, exactly like that.
Only this many people. Oh, okay. Oh, thanks.
Don't want to subscribe. Don't subscribe. No, don't. No. What's the point? Why did I ever believe in myself? Oh, I do. I think Katie, you make a very good point, and I kind of feel for him there as well too. Do you know what I mean? Like, because yeah, he is just lashing out, and he's just like
this lad is. I mean, I don't know him, but I mean, my understanding is that he's a wrestler first. Yeah. You know what I mean? Promoter, like, very distant second. You know what I mean? I think it's just very, very distant. I think it's his one. I could be wrong, but I think this is his only show that he ever promotes. And he could be somebody who's well worth paying money to watch, but I just don't know. And now I won't know.
Spoiler alert. This will definitely be the only show he probably promotes.
Yeah, no, this will be it. Amazing. Next Keen Fame episode is just 2 hours of passive aggressive comments about people not subscribing. Amazing. In at number two, guys, I might be in the market for our new favorite wrestling promotion. Let's talk about
Wrestling Reloaded is back. Sorry, just if you're looking, you know.
Yeah, what's the name of that show on GCW?
Oh yeah,
I'm actually here. Look, I've got a lot of time. We're gonna talk about New Japan, and it's in Say Something Stupid. It's number two, and it's the only time we're gonna talk about New Japan on this show, which is a shame because they ran Sakura Genesis on Sunday, and it was a good show. And I love my New Japan. Look, that's not breaking any news here, obviously, but like I do like get a lot from New Japan, and like even when there's stuff I don't like on it, I enjoy waking up on weekend mornings. I enjoy like having a 9 o'clock wrestling show, like while I'm having my breakfast. It's like it's something to look forward to during the week, like where it's not gonna, you know, when there's like a show on in America and you're like, it's kind of stressful thinking I'm gonna have to stay up till 1 a.m. to start, and when it starts, I'm gonna be up till 4 a.m. It's gonna fuck up my sleeping pattern and stuff. Whereas New Japan just snots nicely into my life. There's a lot of, like, even if it's not the best show, there's still things that'll make me laugh or still things I'll enjoy or appreciate. And this was a good show that punched way above its weight. It looked very light on paper, as a lot of New Japan cards do. They've suffered a lot of losses over the past few years, but they've been really good in replacing wrestlers. But the pandemic has put pay to that, because now they can't transport a lot of their you know, the top level of their roster over, because worldwide travel is shut down. So they're making do with what they have and kind of putting on good shows nonetheless that are over, that are like performing better than they should do. They're overachieving somewhat. Like there was good things on this show. For example, the United Empire at one stage. We'll discuss them more in a moment. But the United Empire unveiled a new member. It was Toa Hanare. There was a bit of an odd moment though, where like he came out, and this is one of the things where he was kind of like a jobber, but not officially. Like he wasn't a young boy jobber, but he was just the guy who lost in every tag match that he was in or any singles match. But like again, he like got frustrated with the losses, so he came back out as a new heel badass persona. But it was funny that like they decided to do a rename as well, and his name, instead of being Toa Hanare, it's Aaron Hanare, which is just like, I don't get how Aaron is badass. I don't get how that's like the thing where you're like, oh, Aaron Hanare. It's not like, I know it's his real name, but like it's not very marketable. Toa Hanare is like is fine. Or just if you're gonna change the name, then change it into something that fits the gimmick. Whereas it's not like this guy coming out in a letter, badass, big angry star on his face, and it's like, who's that? Oh, it's Aaron. And it's like, hey guys, I'm Aaron. How's it going? it's really fit with the persona that he's going for here. But like he looked good, he looked really cool, and it was an interesting thing where he dominated the likes of Naito and Sanada, big names. So it seems like they're going to be going with him. You had Roppongi 3K fighting for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team titles. Yo was injured for the past while, and in the meantime, while he was injured, his tag team partner in Roppongi 3K, Sho, became an established singles wrestler and almost on the verge of being a single star at this stage. So it was strange seeing him have to kind of dilute himself, because he's changed his look and image and gimmick, and everything about him has changed in the meantime. It's like, imagine if like the Rockers broke up but didn't do the big barbershop scene, and then Marty Jannetty just got injured, and in the meantime Shawn Michaels became the Heartbreak Kid, but then Marty Jannetty came back and they kind of had to be like, oh, it'd be bad out if we didn't do the tag team thing, but I'm kind of different to how I was then. So like it was awkward, and that made it interesting, because you're like, are they going to turn on each other? What's going to happen here? They're fighting for the belts, which they never actually lost. How is this going to play out? There's definitely going to be something, because now it doesn't feel like a tag team anymore, where they were the perfect tag team before Yo got injured. They ended up winning the tag belts, and Sho ended up leaving the ring and letting Yo have his moment. Like this was his big comeback moment. But still, you got the feeling that there's something more there. So there's a lot of good stuff. And yet the only time we're getting to discuss it is in Say Something Stupid because of what happened in the main event. And what kind of, I retweeted a link from Voices of Wrestling, which talked through the frustration of this, because the main event was Kota Ibushi against Will Ospreay for the IWGP World Heavyweight Championship. If you haven't seen, by the way, they've merged the two, the heavyweight and the intercontinental belt into one belt. There's a lot of belt discourse around there about whether it looks better or worse. I'm not really into those discussions, so I haven't really touched on it, but you can find it out there if that's something you're interested in. And they've gotten rid of the lineage of the old belts as well, and kind of Kota Ibushi was the first champion of this new kind of era, so to speak. So a lot of people are kind of a bit iffy about that. And obviously this comes into, like, we came into this match off the heels of the big Ospreay rants that I had a few weeks ago after he took out B Priestley and kind of triggered a lot of people because obviously his misogynistic tendencies or the accusations of such in the past had upset a lot of people, that and kind of a lot of his behavior behind the scenes came out in speaking out in kind of accusations that he doesn't even deny and has apologized for. And the problem with it was that he was starting to use it as his heel persona. And that's what I had the issue with, because it came across as very immature to use real life bad things that you've done and had barely skirted away with a semblance of a career still in hand. As a result of, you started to use them as a heel persona. It comes across as, like, again, we're talking about GCW there, be a bit childish, a bit amateurish, a bit backyardy, a bit like, it's not professional to do that. It's not respectful to do that. And it angers people and triggers people for very real reasons as a result. But again, the only time I've kind of started these Ospreay rants was when he kind of started to integrate it into his character, because I've argued, and you might remember me since, like, we've come back talking about great matches he's had, like the match he had with Okada at the start of the year and so on. And I do agree to kind of, you know, my stance on Ospreay is, like, you know, and everyone's entitled to their own, but I'm like, at the end of the day, I don't necessarily like him myself, but has he done something that's not worth having a career? I don't know. Maybe he still should be allowed to have a career and kind of see how that goes, but with the knowledge of what he's like in the background, so people can react to them and he has to navigate and maybe earn back their trust through growing, through improving. And the incident a few weeks ago shows that he hasn't really done so. He's not growing. In fact, he's using it as a heel persona. And that's kind of sickening. So it left an uncomfortable feeling to what should have been just something that we look forward to, was a great wrestling match and fits within New Japan storylines if you take the context outside, which unfortunately we're not able to. This was a great match, and that's what kind of hurts here, because I wanted to enjoy it, but now there's this uneasy feeling about Ospreay and that New Japan is heading in the wrong direction with him, that they're like pushing the wrong people's, like, victims buttons, like victims and people who've gone through horrible stuff. They're pushing their buttons for the sake of a heel reaction. So you just feel like this is not good. Like, this is not, and I can't fully get into this, but I can also recognize that if none of this had happened, I'd be jumping around the room and this would be a very good match. And Ospreay ended up winning the belt. And even then, that's, you know, I feel that it's a mistake and that they should have rethought this, but that's not what I'm talking about here. After the match, they had Ospreay called out Okada and he said, "You're the guy I want. You beat me in Tokyo Dome at the start of the year. I want my revenge and I want to beat you for this heavyweight championship." But as Okada was about to accept, Shingo Takagi took the mic off Okada and he said, "We have unfinished business, Ospreay." So they ended up agreeing that Ospreay would wrestle Shingo Takagi first and the winner would wrestle Okada in the Tokyo Dome show that they've organized at the end of May. That should be stuff that I get really excited about, but I can't. And here's why this is in Say Something Stupid. Because Ospreay continues to use what he has and continues to push the buttons. I dreaded when he won the belt. I'm like, okay, you've won the belt, right? Here's another opportunity to just not push buttons here. Here's another opportunity to, you can just be a generic heel character. You don't have to talk about, like, how you've, like, upset and blacklisted victims of horrible things before. You don't have to mention it. Just leave it and just be a generic heel. He couldn't do that because he gets on the mic afterwards and he just starts going, "You all know what I've done outside the ring." And he's directly referencing it here. He's not winking. He's not hinting. He's saying it. He's like, "You all know what I've done outside the ring. You know, I'm not a good guy, but I fought hard here today and I'd like to take this opportunity to apologize."
to absolutely nobody does the whole McGregor thing, but it's like, imagine you're someone who suffered at the hands of Will Ospreay now watching that. And it's disgusting. It's actually disgusting. It's not like... I'm going to say this really simple, and I thought after speaking out this wouldn't need to be said, but a really big wrestling promotion is performing this kind of stuff out there. And if they're doing it, then there's a possibility that other promotions might get an idea and do it with similar people who have got accusations against them in speaking out. So I want to make this very clear, even though I don't feel like I should have to. Rape is not a heel tactic. It's not something that you can use for your character. When you do it as like silly and trash, as we spoke about, say, GCW behaving, it not only looks as bad and amateurish and backyardy and unprofessional and sickening as that, it's also like in horrible taste. It's also insensitive. It's also scummy is what it is. It's not heelish. You're not getting heat. Like, if you're living in a world where you're just thinking about where you can't like contextualize, like, this is the real world and this is serious, and you can't like think about like, oh, I'm actually damaging people's lives, continuing to damage people's lives. When Ospreay is the first person, when he receives any criticism, to be like, oh, but my mental health is hurting me. You're hurting my mental health. And it's like, you're not thinking about what you're doing to people's mental health here. And he's continuing to just play this persona. And what kind of gets me here is that I feel that this is going to be something else similar to what we had to, what we spoke about with GCW, where like that attitude from promoters who aren't selling as well as they used to in the past, lashing out at the fans, that's going to become a thing that we have to deal with when indie wrestling comes back. I feel that unfortunately this is going to have to be something we deal with, where promoters look at these things and they don't have the maturity of life experience outside of professional wrestling. They're just in this bubble and they're just like thinking of heat, man. Look, and this is my biggest problem with it, because they're like, look, if New Japan are getting away with it, then we should be able to get away with it. And it's going to be an excuse for them to book people who are awful people and who are there, but they're still mates with, and they still want to book them, or they need to book them because they don't have any other wrestlers. That's what I'm afraid of. The repercussions and knock-on effects that a promotion as influential as New Japan will have by running stuff like this. This is not okay. It's not acceptable. And like, there's nothing more I can do. I don't want to give up on New Japan. I do. It fills a hole in my life, but you're pushing me, lads. You're pushing me away from just saying, fuck you. Fuck you. I'm done. I'm getting closer to that door at this stage. And there's no need, because everything else on the show is nice and warm and everything that I like him at New Japan. But I can't talk about that because this is now the main event. This is the main thing happening on the show. And that overshadows, and it's so shitty and scummy that it overshadows everything else. So I'm not going to talk about the good stuff. I'm not going to like promote you. I'm not going to do anything, even though there is good work. And that's shit on everyone else in the promotion, because I'm sure Ospreay is just the scummiest person here. I don't even think New Japan are the bad guys. I think they're just slaves to their booking plans that they book 2 or 3 years out, and they don't want to change it because they think they can get through it. But that's not the reality here, guys. You need to read the room. I know you're on the other side of the world, and maybe it's tough to kind of get like that litmus test that we can get over here. But like, listen now. It's time to stop. It's, and at the very least, if you insist, I don't think Ospreay is going to be a long-term champion. I really hope he's not. I think it's just one of these things where they'll do this every now and then and give a guy a run for a couple of months just to establish him as a top guy. But this guy isn't growing, and you need to address this. I'm not even saying you need to finish his career, but you need to just like not have him like, Jesus Christ, just don't have him refer to the horrible things that got him awful press and the people hate in character. Like, that's a low bar to clear. That's all I'm asking here, guys. Like, that's it's not a lot, and you're making me, and this is the last time we'll talk about New Japan. This is the last time we'll talk about it on this show, and it's unfair on the wrestlers who are good, that are doing good work and everything else. But that's what's happening. You are making these editorial choices to have him say these things and put this on your show, and then promoting him and pushing him further and further and further. So that's the end result. And guess what? Ospreay likes to pride himself. Like, he puts out a tweet today saying, oh, like, well, people are saying New Japan's in trouble, but we just sold out Wrestling Dontaku. And then he puts up a picture of him giving the finger like a fucking 13-year-old on FIFA, like, with that kind of maturity. Like, and I know he's being a heel or whatever, but still,
like, you know, there's an element of truth to that because we know this guy's personality well enough at this stage. But you know what, Ospreay, you're not even number one. You're not even the most stupid thing of the week. You're not even remarkable in any way. You're just a little scumbag. That's all you are. You're just a little scumbag being scummy on TV. And I don't want to watch that. So well done. Nice heel heat. Let's talk about number one. Let's talk about Raw from the week and let's forget about New Japan.
Oh, okay. Right.
Sorry. Like, apologies.
I just feel like my gripes at Raw don't seem that important anymore.
I just didn't want to even give him like the most remarkable thing. I just didn't want to make it remarkable. Like,
yeah, no, I understand that. The reason why I have put Raw on this list, though, is I think it is one of the worst go-home shows I have ever seen for WrestleMania. Not that anything was particularly bad. It was just that nothing was good, you know, that way. So it's not actually hovering around good. We had last week, now we have hovering around bad. Like, it's just nothing really got furthered. Nothing exciting happened at this point. I am way more excited about our WrestleMania rewind and the matches taking place on that than I am about WrestleMania after watching Raw. Actually, no, let me correct myself, the Raw WrestleMania matches, because I'm excited about the SmackDown ones. Like, we had lots of speculations about how, you know, the Hurt Business breakup, there might be more to it. We might see a bit more at WrestleMania. This could be a swerve. Not a swerve. Bobby Lashley bet Cedric Alexander on Raw, and that's that. It looks like that's done. Two boys aren't on Mania. You know, it kind of put a bit of a full stop on it before the show. We had more Braun Strowman and Shane McMahon shenanigans. Again, didn't really go that much further. We had Rhea and Asuka doing their tag team shtick. We had them not be on the same page. We had Rhea beat up Asuka at the end of the match. What made this even worse was the way the commentators played it off as a massive, like, shocked Pikachu face. As if we didn't just watch the same storyline on SmackDown a few weeks ago. Like, literally the exact same storyline. And like, oh, I cannot believe these people can't coexist. You know what I mean? It was just, again, insulting to your intelligence. We had...
No, but just to focus in on Rhea there for a sec. Rhea afterwards acts like she's just... It's like, do you remember Shane McMahon trying to show how smart he was against Braun? Mm. And he just ran away. And it's like, genius. Like, that's Rhea Ripley afterwards trying to act like she's like, you thought I was your friend. I don't think she did, Rhea.
Like, you've literally met once. Like, you know what I mean?
She's literally like, ha, 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 ha. It's like, yeah, if I or Asuka could have predicted one thing to happen from this, it's Rhea turns on Asuka. It's like, oh, yeah.
The only slight development we had was a tag team turmoil match for the women's tag team titles on WrestleMania. But again, it's not good because we're a few days out from Mania and they've just decided, well, let's just mush up all these tag teams. And like, they had this really awkward backstage promo where all the teams have showed up and like, they kind of called themselves on it a little bit because like Tamina and Natalya arrived and they're like, why are you here and why are you in your gear? You know what I mean? Like, which I did appreciate because I was like, yeah, like this is, you showed up just for this like backstage segment. And they kind of teased Billy Kay going into it with Carmella, but they haven't given us that yet. If that happens, that's good for that match, you know what I mean? They'd be the two I want to win out of it. But again, it just bangs of like, we have all these women and we have these titles and, you know, we haven't actually sorted it out now for WrestleMania, so we'll just mush it all up together and hope for the best. Like, and just sloppy. Just the whole show felt sloppy, you know what I mean? It just felt like there was no sense of urgency, there was no sense of excitement. And what's killing me is like, me and Phil have watched a lot of old WrestleManias this week for picking our matches and like just the electricity from even the smaller matches, and you're watching the video packages and you're remembering like, you know, how these matches like came to be, and there's no feeling like that for any match on Raw, I think, this time around, which is really, really disappointing.
Yeah.
Like the actual go home segment of this show was a 20-minute match between Baron Corbin and Drew McIntyre that had absolutely no stakes. You know what I mean? They're still pushing this narrative of like, oh, well, he might take Drew McIntyre out before WrestleMania. He's not. He's not. You know what I mean? Like, we all know it. Again, you're insulting our intelligence. I mean, maybe if he'd Tonya Harding them and came out with like a lead pipe or something, something slightly unexpected, but he's not going to get, like, he's not going to best him in a regular match and take him out of WrestleMania.
Could you imagine just gets hit like an end of days, like, lads, the Raw title match has changed. It's like, oh, all right.
Imagine how deflated would be, where it's like, turns out he did. oh.
Yeah, it was just like disappointing, you know what I mean? And it was just like, I love a good brawl on a go home show, you know what I mean? Like, that's my go-to to get me excited about matches. Like, show me that you are raging so hard that you cannot be contained by referees. Like, that works on me all of the time. A good contract signing works on me. We've had an awful lack of contract signings. Like, it's just, there was, and then, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, no Fiend and Randy Orton. You know what I mean? Mm. Another big Raw match we didn't touch on. Yeah, it was just, there was nothing about this show that got me excited. Other than the fact that I generally get excited for WrestleMania as a whole, there was nothing that got me specifically excited for Raw at WrestleMania.
You're just literally operating off your Katie Harvey Mark fumes.
Yes.
you're just generating it through old, like, kind of fandom. You're just like, I need to bring in the resources, guys.
I just cannot believe how unimaginative and just tame. I think tame is the word I'm looking for all the way through this. You know what I mean? It's just, there was nothing tangible that I could be like, yes, like WrestleMania, fuck yeah.
Raw has just kind of settled into it. And it was a shame, because when you think back to like the stuff with The Miz a few weeks ago and Lashley winning the belt, and kind of, it seemed like it was exciting and there was something happening, but then it's just kind of, it's died on its arse the past few weeks.
Yeah,
like,
and it really it's
a shame. But look, with WrestleMania coming around, the matches may still be good, and like, it's usually, WrestleMania's usually means time for a reshuffle as well. Do you know what I mean? I think they badly need that, because I think Raw is just kind of, they're just tapped out at this stage. They're like, we've done everything with these people. It's like, we're literally doing a match based on someone we've already burned alive. We had to bring them back, like. But yeah, no, let's look, I think now it's WrestleMania week, so we have focused on a lot of negative stuff there. So let's focus on some positives. Let's talk about the good from the week, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for... Some weeks there's like, you know, a lot of stuff where we're brimming, and like, there's always, it's easy to find something on this show. But I think some other weeks that it's just like, you know, you'll talk about something good happening on Raw, because you're covering Raw for Low Blows, and you have to. Katie Harvey, I feel that after that description, this is going to be one of those for you. So yeah, talk to me about any good you could glean from that episode of Raw.
Yeah, all I put in our doc earlier was, the promos, I guess. it was proper mining this week. And these are such small things. Like, I've shit on Shane McMahon and Braun Strowman a lot, and I think deservedly so. What I will say is, Braun's promo this week, he did the absolute best he could with the storyline and the material that he'd been given. Mm. Like, I do like anti-bullying stances on shows like WWE, because they are watched by children so much. Mm. And I do think his promo was really good and really passionate. I mean, let's just ignore the fact he was bullying Adam Pearce up until a few short weeks ago.
We'll just put a pin actually, in that. If you look through his history, he's one of the biggest bullies. In
But like, literally, it's like they got, do you remember like Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss had that story where like they made Nia like a baby face against Alexa? Yeah. Yeah, they may turn it into, but it's literally that again.
Yeah.
And it's like, with someone who, as you said, bullied the shit out of Adam Pearce and literally got himself into this match from being a bully. Because he wasn't happy with the Elimination Chamber. Like, that's literally it.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you don't meet the criteria. Well, I'm just going to bully my way into a match anyway. Like, so, like, if you ignore all that, the promo was really good. You know what I mean? Like, the delivery was spot on, and it was like, you know, I do like Braun Strowman, and I think he's very hard done by a lot of the time with WWE storylines. I love this fascination at WrestleMania of making him into like a sympathetic good guy. Yeah. Like when he won the tag titles with Nicholas, and like, just, it's just always at WrestleMania, he just suddenly gets like this little good streak. Like, and you know, he's just like this cool guy standing up for like the little people.
Well, it's mad to think though that he was like somebody pointed out, like remember when he was beating the shit out of Roman Reigns and tipping over ambulances, like he was like, no, but like he was like actually like cool for like a couple of weeks, like, yeah. Like unironically like cool, and like, you know what I mean, and you could show it to like anyone. It was funny. It was like, it was daily, and then like oh, that's when Braun's at his best, when he's doing like, you know, I'm the 7 foot like 400-pound Jack to the gills underdog here. You know, it's like, what the fuck is this? Like,
yeah. So like his actual promo is good, and look, we give out about Shane McMahon. He's going to do his big spot of Mania, so it'll all probably be all right.
See, but it's a cage match now.
What are your predictions? Like, I'm actually really intrigued by that.
We have a whole section for predictions coming up, so we will get to that. But it's a cage match. Oh, we will. We'll discuss it. Sorry, I'm getting sidetracked, and I'm sidetracking the conversation myself.
The other promo I did like was Bad Bunny's. You know, I have a lot of love for this storyline. One thing that bothered me is they've now made it into a tag match, Damian Priest and Bad Bunny against Miz and Morrison, which I think it should have been all along. It would have been more interesting if it had been Damian Priest versus The Miz originally, and then Bad Bunny, they, you know, do whatever to his car, attack him backstage, and then he was like, I want in this as well, you know, to show that little bit of fighting spirit. It doesn't really make sense to me the way they did it, but again, I just think his promo is really good, and the reason why I liked it is he's talking about being a fan growing up, he's talking about his favorite wrestlers, he's talking about watching it in his sitting room with his brothers, and like, you know, if you've grown up watching wrestling, like you relate to that kind of stuff. And he doesn't just become like a celebrity coming in, you know, with an endorsement. It's like, oh, like, yeah, you're kind of living the dream that a lot of people sitting at home have, you know, to see their favorite show and be involved in WrestleMania. So he just came across as very genuine and fiery. He also cut a big chunk of it in Spanish, which I really, really like, because I think for such an international company, I don't think they actually utilize people's nationalities very well, and they don't utilize that kind of thing very well. So I think that was really nice, and again, it probably resonated to a big chunk of their fan base, you know what I mean? There's probably a lot of Spanish speaking kids watching it being like, oh, that's so cool, like I want to see him do well now, like, because he's like me. And it just came off really nice, and again, I just thought, yeah, you know what, this is a match, this is genuinely the match from Raw's side I am looking forward to the most at WrestleMania.
Did anyone hear this hasn't been a good week for Dave Meltzer, between earlier having to crawl back a story and basically be like, yeah, none of that happened. And then this, did anyone hear Dave Meltzer discussing Bad Bunny during the week?
Oh, he said something weird, didn't he?
He said he's not famous, he's ethnic famous.
Oh, no, he is legit famous. Like.
and the reason he said that is because he's like, I was hanging out at the mall with my son and my friends, and they don't listen to Bad Bunny.
Oh, then.
Dude, you're a journalist. That's not at any level, like, where it's like you can judge that. Especially to make a racially charged comment, like, I think I've done my research enough on this.
I didn't come off as Meltzer-y there, did I? By mentioning
no, not you.
Spanish.
No. No, because you were speaking about it in terms of a positive. Meltzer was like, he's not really famous, he's just ethnic. Whatever ethnic famous is, it's like, oh, he's like, he's taught something horrible there, and then he's like, you can't say that. And then he's just word vomited the words ethnic famous, and it's just like, oh, whatever you were thinking. Well, it's not great, but it's probably better than what he was actually thinking, that became ethnic famous. Sean is very good point in the chat. He goes, you make Braun sound like a child acting good in the month or two before Christmas to make sure they're on Santi's nice list.
That is spot on. That is exactly what happens at WrestleMania.
Braun wants to be on Vincey's good list. amazing stuff. Yeah. I did like the promo. Like you said, he was kind of making the best of what, like, he doesn't write the show, so he can only like perform what he's told to. And he went on Raw Talk and he's like, I'm gonna try do a Miz style smack talk promo. And he did all right for what it's worth, so I do agree with that. In the number four, talk to me about Impact. This is something I'm actually a bit excited about too.
Right, so have any of you been paying attention to Impact or know what the milestone was?
No,
this week. Right, James Storm, guess how many matches he's now had for Impact?
Oh, I did see this. 1,000, is it?
Yeah, 1,000 for James. I absolutely fucking love James Storm. Yes. He was one of my absolute favorites when I used to watch Impact on Bravo back when I was younger. And like, I loved Beer Money, and I used to always want to see DX against Beer Money. That was always my dream match. I wanted James Storm against Shawn Michaels and like Bobby Roode against Triple H.
There was a moment where that was like, yeah, that would have been a really good match. Yeah, that's a good show.
But James Storm, he's one of the names that you'll always kind of like, you know, like Chris Sabin and, you know what I mean, all these other lads, like you'll always associate him with like Impact and like kind of building it into what it became. So it's just really cool that they're letting everyone know, you know, this is the milestone here. It's quite a big deal. And he was against Eric Young, who was another person you would associate as like, you know, another one of Impact's kind of names that got them to where they are now. And like, I just thought that was a cool little milestone. Eric Young at the minute is a bad guy, and he's leading a bad guy faction of dangerous killers called Violent by Design. And he took him on the main event, and who came to back up James Storm before he goes out for that main event? Chris Harris. That's the Wildcat Chris Harris, even before I started watching TNA. So this is quite an old school throwback. Yeah. There used to be a tag team called America's Most Wanted. And it's just a really cool... Obviously, they couldn't get in, like, you know, Bobby Roode as well, or, like, you know, any of them. But, like, America's Most Wanted is, like... That's even, for me, that's even better. That's even, like, you're going Aaron back...
Lee's, like...
Yeah, yeah, I'm trying to think... Did you ever see that clip of... fucking hell, you know, where the Hurricane ran off the top of the cage.
Oh, yeah.
My God. Yeah. Were AMW in that match?
Yeah, that was
an AMW match. Yeah,
they go all the way back to when TNA was doing weekly pay-per-views. They're the start of TNA.
I think this is like a really, really, really cool moment. And like, he comes back and, you know, he backs him up. And then in the main event as well, Violent by Design, just four of them. And then James Storm had a... Jake something and Chris Sabin backing him up. So like they were taking out Violent by Design, but when they were all distracted, like Eric Young had a plan to take out James Storm in the match, but then Chris Harris interferes using his experience, never taking his eyes off the opponent, distracts Eric Young, stops him from beating James Storm. James Storm gets the win. I just thought it was a really nice moment, and it was cool to see America's Most Wanted back, even if it's only for one night, you know what I mean? Like it's about the moment more than like, you know what I mean, anything else. I thought it was a really, because like for a 1,000 match, I think it's good to do something like something special, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just thought that was really cool.
Like, this is the thing, and I don't think we realize or appreciate it, because, you know, just the LOL TNA kind of era kind of soured us all on the product. But they do have a lot of history there. Do you know what I mean? Like, they would do have a lot of stuff that when, like, kind of you think back, you're like, oh, yeah, you know what I mean? So
TNA has been around longer, was it longer than WCW at this stage? And longer than, like, it's been around a very, very long time. Like, it's 02, yeah. 02 to, like, nearly 20 years. 20 just short years. Of 20 years. Holy shit. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I like how they're doing that a lot, where they're, like, bringing back old pay-per-views for, like, one night as kind of a throwback and stuff like that. I like how they embrace their heritage and stuff like that as well, like, because they have it. Like, if you look at the WWE roster, like, a lot of it is the old TNA roster, like, so it's there, like.
They tend to have kind of what I've noticed is like a loyalty to their old guard. Do you know what I mean? They'll always have like Chris Sabin and Alex Shelley obviously came back recently. And you'll always see, like, I remember like even a while ago they had like Petey Williams and like Sanjay Dutt and all come back for second runs. And you'll always see, and I'm sure we'll see them again. You know what I mean? There's always going to be people coming back from the past. And it's not even like in a bad way. It doesn't have like a negative impact on the show either. They're very smart with it. You know what I mean? If they can still wrestle, they'll have like good matches. And if they can't, like they'll have a segment or something. Do you know what I mean? Even just like even there with Chris Harris, you know what I mean? That he interfered and he had a moment, and that's all you needed to go, oh, you know what I mean? Like, I thought it was really, really cool.
Nice. Having people from the past come back for major milestones. That's an interesting one. In at number three, anyway, let's talk about the good from the Hall of Fame. There was actually a fair bit of it. Like, yeah, it wasn't an awful show.
Yeah, like I did like a lot of it. One thing WWE does like better than anyone else's video packages, you know, they're fairly untouchable. So like the Molly Holly video package, I got emotional because like, and I've talked about this before, but she was like my generation, you know, that's who I grew up watching. Like I talked to Debbie a lot about this, whereas we would have grown up watching the same wrestling, the same people. And like, I just don't necessarily know if like, if some female wrestlers now who have grown up in the era of like Sasha and Bailey and Becky, and like, you know, it's fantastic they're grown up in that like era of like women's empowerment and like women being top dogs, that they like, there's just, they don't get the appreciation for the likes of Molly Holly and Victoria and Ivory, and you know, like the ones who just did the best at what they had at the time, you know what I mean? And it's that's why I love seeing people like Molly Holly going to the Hall of Fame, because it is recognizing like exactly their contributions. Like, you just have to listen to the likes of Bailey and Tegan Knox and the rest of the people on the interviews talk about how emotional it is seeing someone like Molly Holly come back for a Rumble spot, and you're like, oh, I get it, like, because that's who inspired me. And it's so great to see that being passed then, because someone who's 15, a 15-year-old girl into wrestling, might be like, I don't actually know who Molly Holly is. And they might go onto YouTube, they might go onto the network, and they might start finding like Mighty Molly. They might start finding like, you know, Molly Molly Holly with the Hollies. And it's just that really cool thing of like, it's going to get passed on down a little bit through the generations from seeing these people go into the Hall of Fame. It even happened with myself, like with the legacy section. You know what I mean? I'd only heard of a couple of them. I'd never heard of, was it Ethel Peterson was, I think, the woman they featured. And she was the first ever woman to do a dropkick in North America. And they have it on video. And they're like, she's going in as a legacy tribute. And now I'm like, I need to learn about that woman. I'd never heard of her. And now I need to go and look up her videos and I need to find out who she was. And, you know, it's just continuing that influence on. So, like, when people give out about the Hall of Fame and it doesn't mean anything, I don't think that's true. I think it does mean a lot. You know what I mean? I think that recognition is lovely. And again, like Eric Bischoff, seeing him on the Hall of Fame, like, that blows my mind even now. You know what I mean? Like, I was watching it with Phil and I was like, you don't understand what it was like for me when he debuted on Raw. Like, that was just incomprehensible to me. I was like, this is insane. Like, it's like when Shane showed up on the final Nitro and you're like, what the fuck is happening? Like, your whole world, it sounds dramatic, but your whole world shatters, because I didn't have the internet. I wasn't on dirt sheets. I wasn't on message boards. And I was just like, what is happening? Wrestling is the most exciting thing in the world. So, like, you know, him going in, I think, is fantastic. Kane going in, like, Kane had such a lovely speech. You know what I mean? Like, I couldn't listen to him talk for half an hour. You know what I mean? It just the right amount of like stories, references, thanking people by name.
Kane's video package, actually, I saw that. I saw that just there before we started, and I was like, oh, like the song, and just the, oh man, it was just so, so good. Like,
even the way they threw back to the organs at the start, the old school Kane theme songs, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, because I'd forgotten that exists. And the first thing I did after the Hall of Fame ended was just play that song, because I'm like, I need to hear that song again. Like, that's so iconic. And you forget. You're so used to seeing them show up for the odd spot on Raw and stuff that you just forget and stuff like that. Like, and they didn't even touch on, like, a lot of his career. Like, take it, Corporate Kane came from Corporate Kane, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, he didn't even
talk. Yeah, that's you, that's your name.
I completely forgot about that. Yeah, oh,
they didn't even touch on it, they didn't even touch on that, you know what I mean? Such a good career, and yeah, no, it was really good to kind of relive that, because you forget, you take it from advantage. Same as Big Show when he went to AEW, we're like, oh no, what, that's our Big Show, you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, what, like, but you just didn't appreciate him, and then when he goes somewhere else, you're like, oh shit, he's actually had a career. So yeah, no, that's very true. I actually realized something last night, and I had a little like keen revelation, like, oh yeah, that's my life. I forgot that I was a huge Molly Holly fan. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a, now, when I was a teenager, this isn't in a weird way, when I was a teenager, I had a poster of her on my wall, but I didn't particularly, I just remembered it last night when I saw her doing the Molly Holly pose, because there was a poster of her doing that, like, you know, with the arms around her side, like, beside Crash and Bob Holly. But like, I was a teenager, but like, when you have posters on your wall when you're a teenager, it's because you usually fancy them or something like that. But like, I didn't really fancy Molly Holly. I just thought she was deadly. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just had her on my wall. I'm like, she's class. And like, I, like, even when like,
she comes back in the Rumble. Like, I marked out like a motherfucker, and I was like, why am I marking out this much for Molly Holly? And it's like, because I was a huge fan and I just forgot. Yeah. And then when I saw her last night, like, I was getting a bit emotional. She's so nice. Did you see her naming the backstage workers? She took time to memorize that. She didn't have notes in front of her. Like, she took time to memorize their names, like, of the people that had helped her out backstage, like, that aren't going to get named in the... It was lovely. It was. There was a lot of good moments. What did you think of the shorter speeches?
I don't think I loved it. Like, because they didn't... I feel like they didn't get to touch on a lot of stuff. Now, I know not everyone is kind of equipped to do like an entertaining 15-minute speech, but I just think a little bit more time, like, or even longer video packages. I just feel like an hour and a half is very short to kind of honor all those people. Like with Molly Holly, they didn't touch on her pre-WWE career at all. Like, did you know when she was in WCW, like, she debuted as Randy Savage's valet in Team Madness, her, Medusa, and a girl called Gorgeous George. And Medusa and Molly Holly actually trained all of the women in the power plant, WCW training thing. That was their side gig. And like, she was one of the very few women that used to wrestle regularly at Nitro. Because she's just had such a big career. And it's just like, I like when they kind of reference all the way through their career. And I like when they reference actual people in their speeches. That's why I like Kane so much. I like hearing like who affected them, who helped them, who was special to them. So I could have done with some of the speeches being a little bit longer.
I agree. Now, I get why they had to do it that way for this year, but yeah, it was missing that whole, because it was pre-taped as well, like, it was missing that whole, like, these, you know when you have that, like, person, that wrestler that's in their 70s and they're like, they don't give a fuck, they'll say it. Yeah. It was missing that element too, like, not the danger element, but just the, like, anything can happen at any second element. So, like, I hope they go back to normal next year. I agree. We had John in the chat says she's a legend in my head for voluntarily shaving her head on Mania 20, so there'd be a women's title match in the card. Very, very good point. I saw that rise a few times on Twitter last night as well. Like, that's a big thing for Molly Holly fans. Jimmy said WWE put a full version of her speech up, including WCW. She recorded at home. That was good as well. I'm going to check that out.
I didn't know that. Thank you for...
Okay, yeah. No, that's post-show watching sorted. I was... guys, as you can probably guess, like, we split kind of the shows between us to make sure that everything gets watched and covered properly. During the week, like, I put in the group chat where I'm like, look, I'm going to be staying up for the Hall of Fame, so I don't mind covering it, but I'm covering a lot already, so does anyone want it in particular? And Katie was like, I'll do it. And then, like, when I was watching it last night, I was like, Eric Bischoff, Kevin Nash, Lord of WCW. Yeah, no, this is... I see why Katie wanted this. You must have loved that side of it. It was proper, like, your Hall of Fame, I'd say.
Yeah. Eric Bischoff is someone I could have listened to do a 20-minute induction speech as well. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or someone who could have done with someone inducting him for that little bit of banter. You know what I mean? I was like, to Phil, what if he just comes out and goes, fuck you, Vince, I won in the end, or something like that. Like, I would have popped so hard.
Amazing, amazing. Good stuff. It is worth your while checking out. If it's something you think you might enjoy, watch it. It's not essential, but, like, again, it's grand. And you'll get the highlights on Mania as well, if that's how you follow it. It's not, like, absolutely must-see, but it was nice to anyone you did watch. In at number two, one that pushed very hard for number one this week, because it may individually be the best thing of the week, but let's talk about SmackDown.
There's two things that I liked about SmackDown this week. The first one was Sami Zayn's trailer for his documentary, where everyone is pitted against him, and he's outlined very clearly as to why. the trailer was excellent, though. It was like, it was very, like, it got me proper hooked. I was like, holy shit, man. Can't believe, like, they didn't technically raise any, like, valid points, but I'm like, I can't believe they fucked Sami Zayn like that. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, the music and the production and the, you know what I mean? Like, Sami Zayn's the sort of person who, like, he's so good at talking, he convinces you, you know what I mean? You're like, ooh, like, yeah, maybe he's got a point. To be honest, like, so I haven't, like, so Logan Paul, right, was obviously part of this. Sami Zayn takes out Logan Paul to show him, like, not takes him out, as in, like, attacks him, as in brings him to the ring and shows him this, the trailer for his documentary, and, you know, that everybody's against him and all that. And I actually thought, like, so I'm not a fan of Logan Paul. I don't like follow him. Like, I know who he is, but like he was very, I was kind of dreading it, because like last time I saw Logan Paul was like a couple of years ago when he was like, you know, being a hashtag mad lad, you know what I mean, like, and acting wild. What I liked about this is that I've heard from a lot of people that he's a lot more toned down now or whatever. Again, I don't follow him, but like this segment I thought he was very toned down and a lot like he was actually, I thought his role was really, really good, because it's like he played the role of like anybody in that position where it's like Sammy, you've been recruited by like the crazy lad and you just realized now, like, on social media he's like, yeah, you might have a point, but then when he gets there he's like, oh, actually this lad's off his fucking nut, like this lad has no idea, oh, this lad's crazy, but he doesn't know how, he can't say it to him because he doesn't want to get shanked, so he's kind of like, you know, you're very passionate about this project. I was talking to Kevin Owens though, and he did raise a point. He's like, oh, Sammy's like, oh, you were talking to Kevin Owens, were you? You weren't Kevin Owens' guest of honor. You were my guest of honor. You're my sorry, you know, just a bit on edge. Like, I'm actually, you know what, it was a good, the more I'm talking about it now, it actually was a really good segment. I'm kind of getting more intrigued about kind of Sammy and Kevin at Mania, because I wasn't really thinking too much about it, but like I think there's gonna be more. I don't think it's just gonna be like, all right, a regular match, Kevin Owens wins, whatever. There might actually be more to it, like in terms of the documentary, and like, will there actually be a conspiracy, you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of intrigued a bit now. I don't know, like, what are you thinking about it? Like,
yeah, like we will discuss the match in general, but like they've done a lot, and they've sold me on this match, because I was like, I thought it was so lazy that it just defaulted a couple of weeks ago when they went, or they're doing Sammy KO, I was like, oh, that's almost the least interesting thing you could do from this feud, because they've just wrestled so much. But now I'm like, oh, they've never wrestled one-on-one at WrestleMania. That'll be a thing that needs to happen. So, and it's Sammy's best thing, and Kevin Owens knows him best. I think they've done very well to kind of get us back to that. Also, what I want to shout out from this was the Sammy dancing meme. Have we all seen that? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, just going everywhere. And he's so good at social media as well. Like, just going like, do not do this meme. This is not funny. And then it's like, obviously inviting it. Like, it's so helpful, because if you, like, that was the first time I saw the meme, and then I'm like, oh, I just need to go to the comments to find all the best ones. Deadly. It was a useful aggregator tool. I love it. I love the documentary thing as well. Like, the bit where, like, it had just enough comedy, but like, not, it was like,
you, it could wasn't still, shit. You know, yeah, what I mean?
You could, like, still take him seriously. You could still believe that that's something he put out. Do you know what I mean? It's not a complete piss take, but there's bits like, are you like a flat earther? And he's like, I've heard that. Does that have anything to do? Good debt? It just cuts away. It's amazing. It's absolutely phenomenal work. Sami Zayn, highlight of SmackDown. And that's saying something. SmackDown's been pretty fucking good.
I love him. But the other thing I like about SmackDown, we did touch on this like at the start, but I love how they're turning SmackDown next week into Sunday Night Heat. Now, obviously, they're calling it like WrestleMania edition, you know what I mean? Like, to make it sound like cool or whatever. But like, it is literally just like, they're going to have the Battle Royal. They're going to have the tag titles match. They're kind of throwing like the Mysterios, Ziggler, Rude, Street Profits, and Otis. Was it the Alpha Academy, is it? Otis and Chad Gable. Throwing all them into a tag title match. This is their kind of get everyone on the card kind of show. And I like it, like, for a number of reasons. I love the idea of like having kind of prelims, you know what I mean, to WrestleMania, like an actual kind of like proper pre-show, not just like, you know, a US, like, you know, like one match and like loads of talking, a proper kind of like, you know what I mean, stuff like, because I actually care about the bottom of the WWE food chain. I was saying this like to someone a while ago, like I love main event, and I love, like, I don't necessarily watch it, but I'll always look up the results, because like main event is the bottom of the food chain in WWE, scrapping with each other to try and like prove themselves and prove that they belong at this level. You know what I mean? It's very high stakes when you think about it. So like, I really like, you know, like, I'm really fascinated. Like, what's Tucker at these days? What's Gulak to Zawa, the Lucha House Party? What are these lads doing? So they're obviously on the Battle Royal. I'm curious, but it's not just them. In the Battle Royal, there's going to be the likes of Jey Uso, Ricochet. You know, there's a couple of big name. Like, I feel kind of bad for Jey Uso. I feel like he should be kind of doing something, but it is what it is. It's going to be a very interesting show. I also feel like in front of fans, the first match should be something special.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, the first match should be like fucking, I don't know. We'll wait and see. It could be something big, but I want it like. I don't want. Imagine the first match in front of fans, like the something we've waited over a year for, and it's just like
Natalya and Tamina come out.
Yeah, yeah. Or it's just like a random tag team turmoil, or like a random battle royal. I feel like they're gonna do. I feel like the first match is gonna be almost the main event in itself.
Yeah.
So it could be Lashley McIntyre. I'd say probably. Oh, actually.
They're setting up for that. We'll talk about that in the Mania preview, but they're setting up for that being the first match. I think that's almost nailed on to be the first match. We'll talk about it in a bit, but yeah, no, I think you're right on that.
Oh, that means anyway. Okay, yeah, but I just think that's a cool way to use SmackDown, and it's a good because the thing is, SmackDown is like wedged into WrestleMania weekend as well, like with two takeovers before it and the Hall of Fame, and then two WrestleManias after. It's kind of like you can't. It'd be a bit weird to have like a regular SmackDown kind of in the middle. Do you know what I mean? Like, and just not acknowledge that like you're sandwiched in between WrestleMania and like you know all the stuff that's happening. So I'm really happy with it.
Yeah, no, it's a really clever way to utilize SmackDown being on Friday because it's awkward. It's really awkward on a monthly basis, especially even doing a prediction contest because we're doing prediction contests with like because we post them on Fridays because you don't want to post it when it's too close and the bookies odds change and stuff like that. So like there's some months where they've announced like three or four matches by the Friday because they're leaving their other announcements until SmackDown. So it has been awkward, but it's a very clever way to use it as part of WrestleMania week. They're turning it into a positive. And yeah, I also get Katie's points from earlier though, where it's bad out on the talent. They're missing the WrestleMania payday. They'll never be featured. But
they need to rack up the wins. Then that's their fault. You know, learn to win. It's about keeping.
Have they put who's in that match out? Yeah,
the Battle Royal.
Yeah.
Oh, they have. Have they?
Yeah, it's basically everyone that's like not involved.
Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Is anyone looking forward to any? Oh, Mustafa Ali actually he's in there as well.
Ali's in there.
I think. Retribution. What?
Ali is he'll be someone who'll be like final four.
No, I think Retribution are going to beat the shit out of him. I'd say he's like first one out.
Okay.
but he should be a favorite. I do get where you're coming from though.
Yeah. It's an interesting one. Let's get this week over with though, because we're dying to talk about Mania. I can feel it. We only have tonight is the last one. So I want to commemorate the Wednesday Night Wars. RIP, rest in power, guys. It's been fun, it's been real, it's been stressful on me on a Thursday morning trying to watch two shows at once, not gonna lie, especially when one's on Fight TV. I've talked about that before. But it is, it's coming over to an end and they're going out swinging. I love how how NXT are running a takeover just before they leave Wednesday nights. They're basically, I put it out on Twitter where it's like when you're losing 12-1 in football and you're like, right, lads, next goal wins. It's like, no, you've lost. But I like how they're doing that. And I like how AEW are also coming back tonight and they're going, all right, well, we've got Mike Tyson on the show. So there's that. So AEW might still win because of the Tyson bump. But it is interesting. They are going out in style. And last week was just an absolute battle. AEW first, I'll start off with. It was one of the best Dynamites they've had in a good while now. Because the thing with Dynamite is, and for me, an issue I've had is it's disappeared up its own arse a little at times, where like Tony Khan's been patting himself on the back going, we're going to give guys a chance on national television. It's like, yeah, okay, fair enough, sounds, that's grand. But like, you can job people out and you don't have to have them in these people we've never seen before in 20-minute matches, like just because you can say you're sound, giving them a chance. Like, that has to be a good show too. And it has been suffering, but this was one of these where they went all in and it was all killer. You had, for example, Christian's comeback match, his first, which I didn't realize until I was watching it. I'm like, because we've seen him on the Rumble and now we're kind of used to the idea that Christian's back. That was his first one-on-one match since he retired. If you think about it, like, it was really good. Him and Kazarian, he hasn't lost it. He's one of these people that's like literally just as good as when he left. There's no ring rust on him. And if there was, there was no sign of it in this match. He is fantastic. He looks fantastic. He looks the exact same. It's just Christian, like, from 2011, just transported to 2021 and is just having amazing matches against people who can hang with him as well. So really, really good first match back. you had MJF and his new stable were hanging out in the Inner Circle's all locker room because they were like, we've taken this over. I pulled some strings. MJF is talking about like how, you know, I'm going to do this with the locker room. I'm going to do that. And then there's a knock on the door. He opens the door. It's Jericho and Sammy Guevara and the boys outside. And then he's like, okay, closes the door on Jericho's angry face. He's like, okay, there's another exit. We'll just make our way out that side. And then Jack Swagger standing out, or Jack Hager standing out the other side. And then there's an absolute, in one of these great 10-minute backstage brawls that AEW do better than anyone, where Jericho is flushing MJF's head down the toilet towards the end of it. Like, they just go all out and have a laugh with these. It seems like such good crack to be involved in, even if people do usually end up bleeding and in actual pain because they're actually putting everything into it. And then the Inner Circle took back their locker room from MJF and the boys, so it was a really good feel-good moment where they're just like, right, lads, let's make ourselves a home again. It's like, yeah. And it's really effective how quickly they've turned Inner Circle babyface. Everyone's like, fuck yeah, let's go, lads. And then the main event, which I'll tell you who was wrestling in it. It was a rematch from the last pay-per-view where it was Orange Cassidy and Chuck against Miro and Kip Sabian, which, again, that was one of the worst parts of the pay-per-view. It's been one of the worst storylines in AEW. It was Arcade Anarchy, so it was basically just a kind of plunder match with a lot of kind of references to the characters. There's a lot of video game arcades and stuff around. And it was the main event, and it was one of the most fun matches they've had on Dynamite this year. They just utilized everything to the max. Loads of ringside brawling, but everything is gimmicky. Everything is a reference to something that's happened within the storyline. At one stage, they're going to play with the little grabber things. Do you know the grabber kind of machines? And then in the middle of a Chris Statlander, who's been out injured for a while and has beef with Penelope Ford, she just comes up in the grabber machine, and then she comes out and starts kicking the shit into Penelope Ford. And then at one stage, Miro gets the best of Orange Cassidy and Chuck, and they start like kind of crawling away from him out to the car park, and Miro standing there like, haha, yes, they're running away, I've gotten the better of them. And then a car starts pulling up towards them, and like, even the commentators are like, why are they running away? And then they're like, a car starts pulling up towards them, and Tony goes, wait a minute, is that Sue? And it's Sue, who is Trent's mom, who's dropping him off to the arena because Trent is making his comeback from injury. And then Trent gets out the back seat of the car, and Sue is the most mommy you've ever seen in your life. She's just waving out the window like, hi. Just a little like Dodie yelled one, like just waving out like, ah, it's Sue. They come back and with Trent they're able to get the win. You have the Pixies, Where's My Mind, who's Orange Cassidy's new music playing, everyone's celebrating, Chris Statlander gets in the ring, Trent is back, and just a real like happy feel good ending to AEW, which I hope it's the end of this feud, because it hasn't necessarily been the best for people involved. And like, quit while you're ahead, lads. This is the perfect feud ender. And just really, you couldn't watch it. Like, if you like wrestling and you like that kind of meta wrestling, this is right up your alley. If you haven't seen it yet, go out of your way to see it. It was an excellent, excellent main event. But NXT wasn't like going away quietly either. They have a takeover to build. There was a couple of things I want to bring up. First up was they have a new women's wrestler debuting called Frankie, and it seems like she's going to be doing a very glam diva style, like similar to the gimmick Carmella's doing, but do that in NXT. But the way they built this up was hilarious, because do you know the way NXT kind of brands itself these days? Not as a professional wrestling, it's almost more like a sportswear brand. Do you know what I mean? The way NXT's ads run and stuff like that, it's more like an ad for Nike or Adidas or Under Armour or something. And it's one of these real glossy kind of ads and promos where you're going around the performance center and you just see like, we are NXT dramatically on the ground. The one difference is
there's a cute little dog that's running through the performance center, and there's still the dramatic NXT style music where it's like dun, 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 and a dog's just sprinting through the performance center. And it's just showing the dog. It's one of these little tiny handbag dogs as well. And then they never explained it. That was the end of the ad, and it just cut to black and they never referred to it. And then it comes back to the dog later. It's like dun, 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 dun. And then it stops at these someone's feet, and this is obviously who Frankie is, and you just see the boots, and then it's like Frankie coming soon at the NXT, and I'm like, okay, that was just a genius vignette. Like, you got me. Like, you just knew that, like, the dog was gonna get everyone going, what the fuck, this is amazing.
That's Taya Valkyrie, isn't it?
Oh, is it?
I think that's who it's gonna be. Yeah.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well,
she's put that on her Twitter, hasn't she?
She may have. I don't know. I haven't seen it, but either way, it was a fantastic intro. Like, I'm all in. And great to see that's someone with legitimate wrestling chops coming to, you know what I mean, to play the character, because sometimes those kind of characters can then under-deliver because they've made them into that character because maybe they were afraid of, like, you know, they're not as talented in the ring, so they have to, like, play up the glamour. So the fact that it's someone that, like, they've put out a vignette that good, and it actually is someone that can wrestle and will add to the division, that's exciting. Keith Hanley points out it was her and John Morrison's dog. There you go. So exciting stuff. And then also as well, the best thing of the week for me, though, was a few weeks ago, Corporate Keane made fun of, Kyle O'Reilly and Adam Cole and their feud. And I have to agree with a lot of it. And it's the reason you haven't really heard it brought up much, because they're not really good. Well, Adam Cole is good on the mic. Kyle O'Reilly, God love him. There's different levels to being good on the mic. Like, there's, you know, the substance of what he says is quite good. If you were to write it down on paper, like, that's a really good promo. But, like, there's different levels. So, like, when you get a trainee, and Katie, you'll be very familiar with this. So when you get a trainee cutting an early promo, they'll do a wrestling promo. Do you know what I mean? Where they shout everything, or they're speaking really dramatically, or speaking like they think a wrestler speaks. Do you know what I mean? And then the next stage of that, when you become an actually good talker, is naturally like the next stage is getting your character's voice. And how does your character talk differently to other characters? And then the next stage after that is naturalizing all of that, so your character naturally talks this way. Someone that, when I was thinking of an example for this, someone that comes to mind for me, oddly, because it's not someone you necessarily can think of as a great promo, but is Randy Orton. Randy Orton speaks the way Randy Orton speaks. Do you know what I mean? You can hear his voice in my head and the way he talks and the cadence he uses. But when Randy Orton talks, you're never thinking of, here's a guy cutting a promo. You're thinking, that's how Randy talks. You know what I mean? And he can naturalize everything he says. So Kyle O'Reilly is kind of at the stage where he's shouty. Like, the substance of what he's saying is quality, but he's saying it in a dramatic way. And he's like, Adam, how could you? We were supposed to be brothers until the end. And he just can't get that part right, where it's not naturalized and he doesn't know what his character's supposed to sound like. So he's just speaking generally like a secondary school drama student. But then they put together this video and they brought in the master. They brought in the one and only Sean Ryan. And that makes everything about this feud amazing, because we've watched this feud happen and it's not been great. It's not been great.
Shite.
Yeah, it's been shite
around. Like,
but Sean Ryan. You put Sean Ryan on it, and I now need to see this match. It's like he just did a Sean Ryan thing, very similar to a lot of the Jordan Devlin, Walter stuff that he used to do that kind of brought him to prominence and stuff, where he's bringing in a lot of outside props and just even like a lot of the texts, like transitions he uses, like OTT fans will look at it and straight away they're like, Sean Ryan, you know what I mean? You'll recognize it. He's using some ideas he's had in the past, but it works. Like, it's amazing.
Man, I saw fucking people on Reddit, and they annoyed the fuck out of me. Like, Prime Target was obviously on the front page because it was so good, and they're like, there was people there being like, Jeremy Borash, everyone. I'm like, are you brain dead? Like, obviously I don't know who Sean Ryan is, but I'm like, yeah. Like, do you not know? Clearly, this is a very different video to anything WWE has ever done. And it's like, and yeah, as you say, if you're even slightly familiar with Sean Ryan, like, there's plenty of people who like don't necessarily follow everything OTT, but they'll see like a Sean Ryan video package go viral and give it a watch. And even they were like, this is clearly OTT's man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he's got his own, it's like a wrestler having their own moveset. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This lad, you can tell that there's no one who can do it like Sean Ryan. He is the absolute fucking best of the best in his field. And he turned, I can't believe he turned the like shittest, like in my, like a few that I have literally hated more than anything else in WWE right now into something that I'm like, oh, this looks deadly. You know what I mean? I'm like, it's very interesting because it's like in OTT, he was working with stuff that we were already into to begin with. And he just elevated it to a new level. Whereas here, it just highlights how good he is because he took something, yeah, that I otherwise would have no interest in. I don't like, I'm not a fan really of either wrestler, yeah. And I don't like the story, but he, in one, you know, video package, he's got me hooked and I'm like, oh, shit.
Do you know what though? It's making me revisit those old videos and it's making me think, had I not seen that presented in that video, would that promo have been shite? You know what I mean? Like, is that how good he is? Like, did they do it or did he do it? It's like, because of the transition job he's done with this, I'm like, he's obviously able to do that. He can make me like anything. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, he's something. He could literally take like Mrs. Brown's Boys and Nationwide, put it together and make you go, oh, daily.
What shit wrestling storylines from the past would you like to see Sean Ryan have a go at and see if he can tell you? Like necrophilia. I'm gonna fuck that corpse. And it's like, you fuck that corpse, Triple H.
Like, but it'd be like dramatic shots of like cemeteries and like graveyards and like dramatic music in the background. You'd be like, oh man, this could be big storylines, mad. Like, he could literally, I'm convinced he can like literally turn anything into the best thing you've ever seen. Like, he is just, I can't, like, the admiration I have for Sean Ryan is just something else. He is, oh my god.
Sean, I don't know if you listen. I know he's been to Loblaws parties. I don't know if you listen, but I swear to God, pitch that to Peacock right now. Like, pitch, I'm going to take the worst stories in wrestling history and I'm going to turn them into the best. I would watch the shit out of that series. Like, every week, Sean Ryan makes a masterpiece out of a disaster. Amazing stuff. Delighted to see him getting used on a more high-profile scale. The thing that it is, though, is like, how is he not getting used for WrestleMania at this stage? Like, how do they have this guy and they're not like, let's put him on everything?
He will.
Like, that is the new standard for wrestling video packages.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm looking forward to. As time goes on, like, you know what I mean? He's going to be like, we're going to be seeing like WrestleMania. I'd love to see it be like a cinematic match. You know what I mean? A pre-record, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. When you see like cinematic matches or whatever, like, I want one done by Sean Ryan. Just see how mad it can get, like.
Oh, imagine like, yeah, imagine him with Reigns, Edge, and Daniel Bryan, and like mixing in the meta story that they have. Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine him with like a world, like a top feud. Like, amazing. Like, and we have it all ahead of us. Like, this is it. This is the end of the war. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Sean Ryan is the US after Pearl Harbor. Do you know what I mean? There's AEW, they're doing all this great stuff and they're coming up, but then like they just unleashed the Sean Ryan bomb and it's like, right, WWE is better because they have Sean Ryan. That's it. Absolutely phenomenal stuff. If you haven't watched Prime Target, go out of your way to watch it. You'll see bits of it before NXT, but they released a 12-minute version on the network that's well worth going out of your way. So check that out. Anyway, we're talking about it as it is. We won't get into it match by match, but let's talk about TakeOver and Prelude, mainly because people will have watched one night of TakeOver by the time they hear this, a lot of people. Night one, you have the Women's Championship in the main event, Io Shirai against Raquel Gonzalez. Walter defends the UK Championship against Tommaso Ciampa. The Triple Threat Tag Team title match for the vacant NXT Tag Team Championship, it's MSK, Grizzled Young Veterans, and Legado del Fantasma. You've got the number one contenders, Gauntlet Eliminator, winner faces Gargano the following night. And then you've got a Women's Tag Team Eliminator as well for the, and then the winners go on face. It's pretty much just them doing the same as they're doing on SmackDown. On Thursday at 8 o'clock, you have NXT UK Prelude, which is a really shit name for a takeover level event. But you have Walter against Rampage Jackson. Also on that, you have Noam Dar against Tyler Tyler Bate for the number one contendership to A-Kid's Heritage Championship. And then you also have Mako Satomura and the recently returned and renamed Amelia McKenzie, formerly Millie McKenzie, take on Isla Dawn and Kaylee Lee Ray. And then on night two of TakeOver, you have Finn Balor against Karrion Kross. Ladder match, Santos Escobar against Jordan Devlin for the Cruiserweight Championship. Johnny Gargano against the winner of the initial match, and then you have the NXT Tag Team titles on the line too. Guys, of this, what are you looking forward to in particular? Katie, what's that for yourself?
Do you know what's crazy is that I know more what's going on NXT UK than I do on American NXT at the moment.
No way.
So that is actually where my attention is drawn.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering how the jet lag is going to affect Walter and getting between events mostly.
He's a professional though.
I love Rampage Brown, so like I am actually genuinely looking forward to that match. Yeah, the NXT stuff, I just don't know enough what's going on. So yeah, I really don't have an answer because I don't know enough what's going on in the American NXT.
Okay, interesting. I never wish for someone to be injured or anything like that. You know what I mean? But what if like Walter just got knocked out in the match against Ciampa and just got knocked out and is like, he's not getting back up. And then it's like, you're going to have to cover him. And then it's like, but we've already pre-recorded the main event to the following night. I'm not saying I want Walter to get injured, like, but if it was just a one night thing where like something happened and he accidentally lost the belt, or the referee just counted three, do that instead. The referee counts three and just has to go with it because it's happened, or he forgets to kick out or something like that. Then yeah, no, that'd be entertaining. That's something I'm looking forward to. Karrion Kross against Finn Balor, that'd be something I'd be into as well. Keen, what's kind of grabbing your eyes now? Adam Cole against Kyle O'Reilly also on night two. Obviously, that's when you're majorly hyped about now.
I've paid a lot of attention to this. The match that I think will be the absolute, probably the match of the entire weekend, is that tag title triple threat match. MSK against Grizzled Young Vets against Legado del Fantasma, yes, will be a fucking banger. The MSK against Grizzled Young Vets in the final of the Dusty Tournament was fucking unbelievable. I was proper going mad for that. And I think it's going to be an absolute banger. And I think Zach Gibson will get to walk out with a title around his waist. I really, really hope so. I think that is so, so good. And then you've got Walter's matches I'm very looking forward to. Walter, like heel Roman Reigns, is a wrestler who like I've got about a million dream matches for, you know what I mean? Like, so many people want to see him fight. Like, could you imagine Walter versus Lesnar? Like that we could get that at some point, you know what I mean? Like, that would just, I don't know. I hope he destroys everyone. Main event, yeah, Balor and Karrion Kross. I'm very intrigued because I think it can go either way. I think Balor could actually win. And I'm really, really looking forward to it. I hope he does. I'm hoping he might do it with the demon. He might not. I don't know. I'm really, really, really looking forward to it and seeing like what happens. I actually think this is, the weekend is pretty stacked, honestly. I'm looking forward to a lot of it.
Mm. Again, EO against Raquel is kind of going under the radar here as well. And it's a fascinating match because it's like, it's a real test for Raquel Gonzalez. Like, she's got a lot of hype. She's kind of got the Rhea Ripley buzz, and she beat Rhea Ripley on her last night in NXT. And she's kind of getting that. And she's had good matches so far, and she's held her spot so far. And EO could be getting brought to Raw or SmackDown soon. Who knows? She's held the belt for a while, so Raquel may be winning here, but it's just a real test to see if she's actually got it or not.
I think this is the most predictable match on the card. I think Raquel looks like she's going to win, looks like she's going to pull it off. Dakota Kai is going to come in and turn on her friend. I think that's like definitely where they're going with it. Just based off, just the one dead giveaway is like, do you not see when they're, what was it? Where it was like EO went to call out Raquel Gonzalez, and it's like, she like goes, like Dakota Kai puts her hand out to like take the microphone or take something. I can't remember what it was. Like, it was meant to be an exchange, and she walks straight past Dakota Kai up to Raquel. And you can see in Dakota Kai's face, it was kind of like a, what the fuck? And it's like, that's Sean Ryan's using that like in about 3 months. It's right there, ready. Like, there's no way that's not how this match is ending. Like, I'm so, like, I think, like, the rest of it, like, for example, like, Balor and Kross, I'm like, I think Balor's going to go all demon and be Karrion Kross, but I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't know. Like, I think I think, like, with Balor and Cross, it's like, if the Demon comes out, I think he's beating Cross. If not, it could go either way, but he could still win. So I'm like, I'm really intrigued. With this, I really don't see Raquel Gonzalez beating Io Shirai. You know, it could. That's the fun. I mean, we say it like every time we do predictions. That's what makes wrestling what it is the what if. But I think the what if for that match is like the smallest out of all of them. For me personally, well, no, actually, no, Walter Ciampa's the smallest, but like, Io Raquel, I'd say, is like next in predictability. Like,
imagine they had to just like, they had to some fuck up happened. Ciampa ended up winning and they had to recut the NXT UK title match where it's the exact same Walter's body, but just the Master Ciampa's head.
No, what I want is they have to like redo Rampage Walter, but they just like Photoshop the title out of it. So it's like, for the ring the bell. And it's like, and for his entrance, it's like he's not actually holding it. Like they Photoshop like an apple or something in his hand, like a really big apple. It's like, for nothing. This is Walter versus Rampage.
They just focus on his face. It's just really close up shots of his face walking to the ring. It's like, this isn't how Walter's entrance goes.
And it shows the promo beforehand. It's like, Rampage, I really want that apple. it's like completely redo it. Like,
amazing. I'm also intrigued to see, because I haven't seen much NXT UK, so I'm intrigued to see Millie McKenzie's new gimmick as well. I think she's reading up on it, I think she's going to turn heel on Mako. I think that's the way it's going to go here, or there's going to be something, because whenever a wrestler changes name like that, we saw it with Aaron Henare. You know what I mean? It's a name change is usually comes with a character change as well. So it's going to be interesting.
Well, see, like, in this match, Isla Dawn has just turned heel.
There's so many heels in that division as well. Like they've got like
she's just turned.
Nina Samuels and Ginny are literally the same character. Like there's you know what I mean? I'm hoping I see where you're coming from. That's a really good shout actually about the name change. Because when you said it, I was like, Amelia. Yeah. But there's too much of the same shit. You know what I mean? I think Millie McKenzie would be a really good face personally, but you never know.
Yeah. Where's Tegan Knox at? Is she still injured?
Oh, it's dog shit. Like, she got injured, like, tight. Like, and I think it's the same injury over and over again as well. That happened months ago. Yeah.
Yeah, but there you go. There's someone who like, you'd like to see in there anyway. Look, a lot to be excited about, and we haven't even talked about WrestleMania. We're going to get in with really quick picks. We say that. For night one, we'll start off with. So, first match, Tag Team Turmoil. We're going to lump this in. It's Tag Team Turmoil, but then the next night, they're going to be facing Nia and Shayna. So, announced so far for this match is Lana, Naomi, Dana, Brooke and Mandy Rose, the Riot Squad, Natalya and Tamina. We can't like overlook the fact that maybe more people might get announced on SmackDown. I'm rooting for Billy and Jilly to reunite after the Royal Rumble personally. If they're in it, they're my picks. Bailey's not on this card. Charlotte's not on this card.
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Bailey's not on this card at all. Like, there's a lot of people that could get added to this late on. But what are you feeling for this? What do we think in terms of like who's leaving with the women's tag team belts? Who's leaving the weekend with it?
Bailey teams with Billy. That's mad. Billy actually not on, like, or Bailey's not on it. That's crazy. Yeah. I'd say Bailey teams with Billy and they walk out as champions. Or like Carmella and like, I don't know, maybe Carmella and Billy win it, but then Carmella's taken out. Or I don't know. There's no way like Bailey's doing nothing unless it's like an injury or something. But I for me, I have to say Billy and Bailey. It works. They're a team. They're friends. Their first names start with a B. They're basically best friends already. Please. I really, really want this now, actually. Oh my God. Yeah. They walk out as champions. Let's
Billy
go.
Bailey. There we go. Who are you thinking, Katie?
I was thinking Billy and Carmella, you know, just I just don't see anyone here actually winning the match. You know, like, I don't think any of these people in the match are going to win the match. You know, like, they've already jobbed out Naomi and Lana. They've jobbed out Dana and Mandy like so many times in the last few weeks. I'm not really sure what they've been doing with the other two teams, but like, I mean, Natalya and Tamina will just be happy to get their WrestleMania spot. So like, yeah, I think it's someone who's going to be added, and I think it's Carmella and Billy.
Okay, interesting stuff. Right, moving on, we have, this could be the match that ends up stealing the entire weekend. I was listening to Cesaro on Renee Paquette's podcast today, and he said he's going to go, it's WrestleMania 37, he's going to go for 37 swings in this match. Cesaro against Seth Rollins. Katie, which way do you see this one going?
I would love for Cesaro to get his big moment. I hope that's the way it goes. I think it might go that way. I think it might. I'm gonna go Cesaro.
I think Cesaro's winning. I think that's the design of this match, just to show, like, I think it's like a tester match where Vince is like, all right, you always get momentum, you say you can do it, here's your chance. And I hope he does. Because even if you listen to that podcast and he goes through all the gimmicks he's ever had in WWE, and there's a lot. And it's like, and he just says, I've never said no to a gimmick. I just, whatever they give me, I just go along with it and just make my best out of it. And he's like, and then when you hear him, it's like, he made that work. It's like, fucking just let him have a run. So I think this is his time. Corbin Kane, what do you think? You come for SmackDown.
I'm backing Cesaro all the way. I love Cesaro. I think he's I think he's a future world champion even still. I'm just thinking how sound Cesaro is. Has Cesaro ever betrayed his tag team partner? Because I was just thinking of like The Bar, Tyson Kidd. There's definitely another tag team in there I'm not remembering, but I feel like Cesaro has just never betrayed. Like, he's just the coolest man ever. Like,
it's a good shout. Yeah. Jack Swagger, actually, he became a Paul Heyman guy, but I don't think he even turned on him. I don't think he like attacked him,
and Swagger's a bit
went
of a dick
to separate
anyway.
ways.
Don't blame him. No, Cesaro is fucking cool. I think this match is going to be a banger. I'm really hoping Cesaro gets it. And I'd even be up for a Cesaro dethroning Roman Reigns at some point, but we'll wait and see.
That'd be a great match.
Like, yeah. I'd imagine Big E is the favorite, but we'll see how Cesaro gets in the mix. I'm looking forward to it.
Jimmy wants to see how ridiculous Seth's gear is going to be after the suits in recent weeks. I loved that he put up a throwback this week where he wore the flaming suit to the Hall of Fame last night, and it actually matches. Do you remember the gear we made fun of him, where it's like the E Lucha gear he wore a few years ago? And it's a throwback to that. It's literally a piss take of that. Amazing stuff from Seth. He's really reinvigorated his character as of late. Amos almost and AJ Styles against the New Day. Katie, you've been watching this on Raw. Which way do you see it going?
Like, they've been teasing dissension between AJ and Omos, but I don't think that's going to play off at WrestleMania. They had Xavier Woods beat AJ on the last Raw really quickly.
Oh, that's a sign. Whoever loses on the last Raw,
I think AJ and Omos could win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be something fresh going forwards, because we've seen the New Day like face so many different tag teams and stuff. I think that'd be fresh and it'd be good. Like, and I think almost debuting at WrestleMania and like winning the tag titles is a good story.
Yeah, I see them winning as well, and I can't really say why, apart from it being his debut and he's a monster, and it'd be weird if he didn't win. So yeah, I'm thinking the same. Keane, how are you feeling?
Omos is the fucking man, and I backed him 100%. AJ and Omos 100% are walking out as champs. 100%.
We were nearly talking about this earlier on. Shane McMahon against Braun Strowman. Somehow we had to restrain ourselves from talking about their cage match. So Corbin Keane, I had to cut you off earlier. So what do you think is going to happen here? This is a cage match, so we're not jumping off the pirate ship. But the cage match does actually make sense, because he's been running away the entire feud, so I see why they went this route. But does that kind of restrain the potential of a Shane mental spot, or do you still think something mental is going to happen?
Oh, this intrigues me even further, because I don't. But then it is WWE. They like it, letdowns do happen, but I think I don't know. Like, I don't think they're going to do just a basic jump off the cage. Not after he jumped off the cell a couple of years ago. Like, surely. Like, I think there'll be something. Maybe Braun like throws him through the cage. Oh, fuck, actually, I think that's going to be it. Bollocks. I think he's going to throw him through the cage and then Shane wins. Fuck, no.
Valentine's Day Massacre throwback from 1999.
But they did that before, like a couple of years ago at Reigns and Corbin as well. It's not like a new thing. So I'm hoping... Chelsea got a second one. Anyway, I'm cheering on Braun. I hope Braun beats Shane, but I hope Shane does something cool. That's what I really want to see. A dive off the stage, through the cage, through the ring. I think what I'm hoping for really is like something mad happens that none of us are anticipating. That's why we can't predict it. You know what I mean? But I think I'm being a bit optimistic. I don't know. I really like, expectations are low going in, but I don't know if they're going to take advantage of that. We'll see.
Shane has a history of having kind of meh WrestleMania build-ups, but then over-delivering in matches. You think of The Miz a few years ago as a good example. That was an amazing WrestleMania match. Katie, I know you're paying for Shane McMahon to give you two cameos, and obviously a fan. So do you think that, I know you haven't been a fan of this storyline though, every week on Say Something Stupid, we've been covering it. Do you think that they can turn it around in the match? And because if they do, then all is forgiven.
What if the twist is that Shane McMahon isn't going to do anything crazy? What if this is the WrestleMania where he's saying, you know what? I want respect for my wrestling ability, not for my stunt work. And it's like, remember that time Braun Strowman and The Big Show had a chain wrestling match on Raw? Oh. Like, what if the two of them were just like, no, let's go out there and show the guys that we can really wrestle, you know, that we don't need to finish. That would be gas.
Do you think there'll be interference, actually?
Yeah, Jackson Ryker and Elias have been involved all the way through. Yeah. So, but then you could get a cool spot with Braun, like, I don't know, killing three lads at once. So yeah. I think more people means more scope for something crazy.
Imagine Braun jumped off the cell or the cage.
Oh, everyone's thinking Shane, and then Braun just hits like a fucking Phoenix splash off the
Oh my god.
It'd be more like a Brock Lesnar shooting star, like, if we're being honest. Like, it'd be like, no, don't do it. No, no, I mean it. Don't do it. Interesting stuff. Anyway, moving on, we have Katie Harvey's favorite match of the year contender already. It's on her list for the Blowies next year. It's Miz and Morrison against Bad Bunny and Damian Priest. We talked a lot about the feud. Let's talk about what we think is going to happen.
Like Bad Bunny and Damian Priest are winning. Like, there's no two ways about that. When he was cutting his promo on Raw, he was talking about his spot at the Rumble, and Bad Bunny was like, you know, when you're just caught in the moment and you just have to climb on the top rope and jump off. I just want to give him some advice and say, don't do that. Don't get caught up in the moment. That's not necessary. They're definitely winning, but I think the match will be surprisingly good.
Okay, fair enough. Keane, how are you looking at this match?
I think I'll give it a chance. You know, why not? But it's WrestleMania. Look, on one hand, does the celebrity ever lose? No, never. Especially when they tag with like someone that WWE clearly have big plans for, Damian Priest. But on the other hand, no team name, no match in music, as far as I know, no chemistry, no experience teaming together, no tag team moveset. You know what I mean? No, like, I just, you know, you're coming up against former tag team champions here. I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to imagine them getting the win, but I think they probably will.
You're saying no match in tag gear, but you haven't seen Bad Bunny in tag gear.
That's the point. They haven't worn it in. They haven't bedded it in. Yeah. The chemistry isn't there. It's, but like, he's just been the training, start of chemistry.
He's been training every day for 4 months with Damian Priest. Chemistry
But training and actual competing on the biggest stage are two different things. Tag team wrestling is not tag team training. There is a difference.
I love that we've just talked about almost doing his WrestleMania debut. And we're like, yeah, he's definitely going to smash it. He's definitely going to like fucking walk away with the tag titles here. And now we're like, it's unbelievable that Bad Bunny.
It's because he's massive. Nobody on, like, almost could take out tag teams on his own. I don't think Bad Bunny or Priest could do that on their own.
Fair. Priest is massive.
Not compared to Omos. He's like half Omos's size.
He is. Omos could eat him.
That's
Omos has had shits bigger than Damian Priest.
And Priest is a bit, like, you're not wrong when you say like Priest isn't like a big like wrestler, but it's just compared to Omos, it's like next level, like.
Yeah. No, fair. I'm gonna go for Bad Bunny and Priest. Yeah. Though. Everything on paper says Miz and Jomo here. But yeah, no, celebrities just pull it out of the bag. They just reach down and they go, but wait, things are looking bad right now. But think about how famous you are.
No,
and they just get the strength that they didn't beforehand, the strength of fame and fortune.
Do you know what it is? They can train for the Miz and John Morrison. They have decades of footage they can use to analyze their movesets. They don't know what Bad Bunny's capable of. No, only Damian Priest knows the moveset that Bad Bunny possesses. They can't train for him. You know what I mean? So,
when you see Bad Bunny, when you see Miz on the ground and Bad Bunny tags in and does what looks like an awkward elbow drop, just remember that hurts more because it's new and it's an unexpected elbow drop.
He's bracing his chest and it just hits him on the knees. Like, fuck, I wasn't ready for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You never get elbow drops to the knees unexpected. He's thrown him off his game. We also have, and we were speaking about this earlier. So, there, Drew McIntyre has been doing interviews all week where he's saying he doesn't mind not being the main event on night one. He's saying part of it would be he'd love to go out and be the first reaction that fans heard as a result of like not being able to get his WrestleMania moment. So if he could be the first guy that fans reacted to, he'd love that. So it seems to be like he's kind of, you know, paving the way so that our expectations will be there. And that when he comes out first, we won't be like, what the fuck? This seems to me like it's nailed on to be the opener. Corporate Keen, I had to cut you off earlier on. Now you can go for it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't see how it won't be. Like, looking at the card, it's just, again, like, the first match is the main event. Like, that's, not to be, like, harsh on Sasha and Bianca, but, like, that's just, because of the unusual circumstances, that's just how it's structured. On night two, the last match is the main event, but in this one, it really does feel like there's going to be a lot of anticipation, you know what I mean? Like, I am actually so fucking excited to see a wrestling show with fans there, even if it's, like, 1% capacity, which it isn't, it's a lot higher, but I don't know what it is exactly, but, like,
5,000.
Out of, like,
not a small crowd, like, by any means.
That's, yeah, that's even no matter what size the arena is, I suppose that's quite a lot. And it's gonna be like, even like, I mean, you watched the Premier League when what was it, like 2,000 fans showed. Remember, they did trials back in November, and it made a world. It was like there was 50,000, you know what I mean? Like, it's they had them all in kind of the same part or whatever.
Well, you could hear chants, like they didn't. It was almost better with the Premier League because you could hear the people speaking. Do you know what I mean? You could make out what they're saying. It wasn't just a crowd cacophony. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's a world of difference between like piped in. It was
loud. It was as loud as it had ever been, but it was all just clearer. You know what I mean? It was like the sound contrast was turned up, you know? I agree with that. That's very true.
Oh, man. So, like, when Natalya and Tamina come out, there's going to be people literally going, yeah! But that's the thing as well. Just we're talking about the crowd. I know we'll obviously get to, like, Reigns and Edge and Bryan and all that, like, later on, not to get into the match or whatever, but, like, there's all this talk of like, oh, you know, they don't want Edge to get booed or cheered, and they don't want this person to get cheered or that person to get cheered. I think everyone's getting fucking cheered. I don't see how like people here are gonna be like booed out of a building because everyone's just gonna be too happy to see them. You know what I mean? Like, what do you think when Lashley's gonna show up? They're gonna be like, oh no, there's Lashley. They're gonna be like, lads, I'm at a fucking wrestling show watching live wrestling, and there's a fucking wrestler. Oh my god, you know what I mean?
A human.
Yeah. It's like the excitement, the anticipation is gonna be something else. Unfortunately, with this match going on first, I feel like this is actually, I think Drew McIntyre is definitely walking away. If this is going on first, they're gonna have a big. And I also like. When I'm thinking, like, what they would be thinking, they're saying, like, obviously, like, they love McIntyre, and McIntyre had a whole reign in front of nothing, you know what I mean? Like, in front of zero fans.
Yeah.
I think they're going to want to give him another chance in front of, like, in front of audiences. Fuck's sake! I really want Lashley to go on a run, but, like, yeah, I can see McIntyre winning this, to fuck's sake. But it's going to be good. It's going to be good seeing the fans reacting and having a laugh and, like, oh, man, I'm really looking forward to that, actually.
I don't necessarily see it being that they're going to give, because considered like they're like after this show, they're going back to the Thunderdome until at least the middle of the year, they're saying. So realistically, I'd say SummerSlam will be the next show they'll have fans. And then maybe after that, they'll go back to arenas and touring and stuff like that. But like, so I can see what it'll be here is I agree with your match prediction result, but I don't necessarily see it as the end of the road for Lashley, because I think they'll give Drew his moment of winning at WrestleMania in front of fans. That's what they're going to give him here. I don't think they're going to give him a year-long title reign with fans, because that's not going to be the way it is. They're not going to have fans in arenas now from Monday onwards for another few months. It's going back to the Thunderdome. So there is hope for Lashley. And I'd agree with what you're saying there. But Katie, would you kind of feel that it's Drew's time? Or by the way, Sean's asking, what time does it start? Both nights start at 1 a.m. So it's back to 1 a.m., but they finish at 4 a.m.
Hate that. it's too early to take it off Lashley. I don't think they're putting it straight back on Drew. I just don't, like, nothing about this tells me it's going straight back on Drew.
Ooh, hot take. I like it. Okay, fair play. And then in like what I like about this would be so like, I know what you're saying, Keen, about the opening match is the main event, but I think there's just two main events for the first night, because the opening match is a main event level kind of moment and match. I think Sasha and Bianca will go on last, but they'll get to say they were the main event. Do you know what I mean? So it'll be one of these things where WWE will spin history to mean whatever point they're trying to make at the time. Do you know what I mean? Like when they're doing a documentary on how fans came back after the pandemic era, Drew will be like, the first match was the real main event. But when they're doing a documentary on how women, like the women's evolution happened, and it's like, and Sasha and Bianca were the second women to main event. You know what I mean? So they'll just use it for whatever purpose. So it's a cool thing for both of them. And I think that's definitely the way they should go in terms of the matches. But Sasha and Bianca probably going on last. Corbin Keane, you've been following this on SmackDown. So is this nailed on? Is there any chance whatsoever of Sasha winning here? Or is this just Bianca's moment?
Probably not, unless like unless it's interference, something like that. I don't, like Bianca is like very much like the heavy favorite to win it. I don't know. It is interesting because like, I don't know, like, that's the one thing about WrestleMania being two nights now is, like, do you consider both matches to be the main event? Do you consider, like, night two to be the main event? I don't know. I think it's cool their main event, though, either way. They're both really, really good. I think it'll be a really good match. I don't know. Like, Sasha could win it, but, like, Bianca just has all the momentum right now. I don't know. It's hard to imagine her not winning it.
Katie, where are you feeling on this?
I think Bianca will and should win it because, like, they've already started creating this new megastar and they just need to run all the way with it. Like, there's no need for Sasha to win this match. And I do also love, I hope this does go on last because I think it's really nice that with two nights, the two Rumble winners go on last. I think it makes that Rumble spot be even more important now. You know, I think it's a nice bit of a symmetry. But yeah, no, I hope Bianca wins. I'm not a massive Sasha fan, so I'm kind of ready for someone else to take the reins in the women's division.
I've also heard like rumors of like Sasha Banks to Hollywood and all that. So I don't know how like how true that is, but like, you know, it could be. You never know. I'd rather she stayed. I think Sasha Banks is like an incredible asset to SmackDown, but it's hard to imagine Bianca losing. So
here's the thing: you'd never know from watching WWE TV. Sasha's already in probably the biggest TV show on the planet. It's just WWE, for some reason, never mentioned that she's a star of The Mandalorian. She's in a Star Wars TV show as we speak. And they just never bring it up for some weird WWE reason. So yeah, there could be a lot to that. I think Bianca's winning too. On to night two, we've already discussed the women's tag team situation, so we'll get started. Sheamus Riddle, is this just Sheamus getting his title? I think we all kind of hope that's the way after the time he's put in. I'm hearing a lot of talk about him being the pandemic GOAT, so I think he deserves it. I hope he wins it. I'm picking him to win it. Katie, how do you feel?
Oh, same. Sheamus has been on an incredible run the last few months, and he deserves it. Like,
yeah, it'd be awesome. Keane,
what's cool about Sheamus is the fact that, like, remember there was a one point where it seemed like he was going to retire or something because of his neck injuries, and he went back for another run, and I'm a big fan of Sheamus's work. I'd love to see him walk out as United States champion, so I'm gonna back him.
If you want more Sheamus content and you haven't seen it already, check out the Day of Fastlane, a WWE documentary they released. It's pretty much just focuses. It's just an extended mix of Sheamus and Drew, like in the match that they had there. It's a really nice moment if you've seen it on Twitter, even after the match where he sees Cesaro and he just breaks down crying in Cesaro's arms and just starts telling him how much he misses him. It's a really real personal moment that you're like, I don't feel like cameras should be there for this. Like, but it's lovely and it's nice and we're all like big Sheamus fans, especially after the past few months. So check that out. Yeah, Sheamus to win here. Kevin Owens against Sami Zayn. Keane, we kind of had to cut off the talk and speculation around this match. Logan Paul is going to be in Sami Zayn's corner. So what are you thinking about the match itself?
I completely forgot what I was going to say. I've heard rumors of Jake Paul getting involved. I hope that doesn't happen. He's shy.
He's in Sami's corner. He is involved in this match.
No, Jake Paul. I don't want that. So Owens and Sammy, what was I saying earlier?
I can't remember. It was interesting. It's just we're always so focused on the next thing that we forget what happened. Who do you think is going
to
win?
I can't imagine Owens losing. I want Sammy to win. Yeah, I don't know. I think, like, this is one of those where, like, the heavy favorite is Kevin Owens, and it's hard to imagine it going any other way, but we'll wait and see, I suppose.
Katie, what are you thinking for this?
Yeah, I think Owens has to win to further the conspiracy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
To make it go deeper. So I think
Logan Paul is going to become part of the conspiracy against Sammy. I think Sammy's going to do something where he pushes Logan Paul. Logan Paul's going to push him back, pushes him into a stunner. That's how he got screwed, because Logan Paul interfered. You only see the footage of Logan Paul pushing him, and then that's going to be the finish. I really hope these guys go out and have a WrestleMania classic like they can and have done so many times before, and do it at WrestleMania, so that it's like, because again, we forget, like we think we've seen this match 1,000 times because we have, but like they've never had a match at Mania. So this will be forever etched when we rewatch WrestleMania in years to come, as Katie and Phil are now. This will be the memento version, because you're not going to go back and watch Vengeance 2017. Do you know what I mean? Like, so this would be the Sammy and KO match. That'll be the rewatch match as well. So I hope they actually have a good wrestling match and don't just make it a gimmicky match with a celebrity at ringside. But there always is that possibility of play. I just hope that they let them have the classic they can. We have a Nigerian drums match between Apollo and Big E for the Intercontinental Championship. Apollo explained that this match is, there's no rules. For me, it sounds like they're low-key doing a cinematic match. There's no rules. You just have to beat the opponent until the beating sounds like a drum.
oh, that's deadly. That's fucking... And I think the reason I think you might be right is because obviously they've had loads of singles matches up to now. And that'd be so Apollo's gonna kill him. I love Apollo Crews, man. I just fucking love him. I'm backing him all the way here.
Okay, Apollo to win. That's an interesting show. Katie, Big E's first WrestleMania is a single star. Do you think that he may be taking an L here? This is Apollo style match, of course.
Yeah, like that's why I think Apollo's winning, because like generally don't people win a match when it's their match?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, when it's specifically invented by them. So yeah, I just think it's again time to kind of like make that new star and make the switch.
Be interested, like it's difficult though, because the title's on the line. Like the Boneyard match, calling Undertaker the winner last year was fine. Like technically there was no real pinfall or anything. It was just he buried the guy, so you assume that he'd won. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, well the other guy is probably dead, so you know, I'll call you the winner. But it's difficult now because the title's on the line. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know what I mean? Imagine Big E on SmackDown next week and he's like, it was more of a bass guitar sound than a drum. Do you know what I mean? Is it like, is there some criteria to necessitate a title change here? You're saying there's no rules. That sounds good on paper, but there needs to be rules for a title to change hands, like of some sort. I hope there's a pinfall or something.
The ref has to bring out intrigued drum, though. And it's like, wait, does that hang on a minute? Dum, dum. It's like, dum,
do that punch again. All right, one sec. Boof. Yeah, you win. Yeah.
What if the first punch is just like, it sounds like a drum? You know what I mean? You never know. Like, or just or like he just hits a chop and it's like, oh, hang on a minute. Do that again.
He's
like, oh,
Piggy's got an awful bassy chest.
I know. I'm quite confident Apollo's winning this. I'm rooting for him.
Do you know what? The Boneyard match from last year has got, like, WWE have bought credit with me for ridiculous sounding match stipulations that have no idea what it's actually going to be. They bought credit with me. So because of the Boneyard match and because of how wrong I was dreading that, I'm going to choose to believe that this is going to be good. And Apollo and Big E have bought into this storyline and they've nailed every step of it.
Oh, they've been, I haven't even mentioned that yet. They've been like, so like the charisma and all like the promo, like it feels fucked. Like a lot of the time when you watch like feuds and stuff, you don't really feel as though they proper hate each other. You know what I mean? But this feels like again, particularly when you see like this other side of Big E as well. And then like this other side of Apollo, of course, like I've talked about it before, but it's just, I just love this. So like, I'm actually, you know what? It's only as I'm talking to you, so I realize I'm actually really looking forward to this match. Like in particular, like I can't fucking wait.
This is one of these great things about wrestling as well, because the thing is, do you remember when Big E started as a singles guy and he had that like promo with Paul Heyman where it's like, you're gonna have to get serious, you're gonna have to start being more serious now, and he's like, no, I don't need to be serious, but we knew he did, so we knew there had to be a feud which pushed him in that direction, and someone had to do something to him, and they started off with Sheamus, but it was actually this feud. And if you think about where they conceptualize this feud, they're like, Apollo is the person that's gonna push him over the line, and that's how he becomes serious. Do you know
know what I mean? But he hasn't committed to it. He could still go back to being fun Big E next week, you know, if he wins this match. But which is, we want the best of both, because he's too charismatic to let him just be a serious wrestler permanently. But what's actually after happening is Apollo has evolved in this feud so much that it's like, well, maybe Apollo's going to win after all, like, you know, so which sets up for a really intriguing match. So I'm excited for it. So I think I'm going to go Big E, but I could change that. Keep an eye on the predictions that we put up, because that could change. The Fiend against Randy Orton. It would seem on paper that this is set up for The Fiend to... Do you think he's going to burn Orton alive? Do you think there's going to be weird shit in this? There has to be weird shit. Do you think it's going to be weirder than when there was bugs on the ring at WrestleMania 33 for no reason?
Bollocks. I just realized, like, would they do a cinematic match with Big E and Apollo if this match is also on the same night?
See, this is a singles match. This, everything I get from this seems to be it's happening in the ring, because they tend to announce, even if they don't tell you it's a cinematic match, they don't do a Tony Khan where it's like, it's a cinematic match. They don't like do that beforehand and telegraph. They tend to give you some kind of Iggy that it's going to be. So I sense that this is going to be in the ring, and like, it's going to be not
really
a Fiend match. Isn't a Fiend match. It's a Fiend match, not a regular match. They're not going to start with a lockup, like, you know, yeah. But it's going to be more like the Alexa match than like the match he had with Braun Strowman in the Creek. You know, it's not going to be one of them.
I don't see how, like, after everything they've done, they can, like, pull off the finale in a ring. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I'm kind of like, what? Like, how do you finish it off at the top level, like, in a ring? Yeah. I mean, they have to do special effects or something. I'm really, what I'm intrigued about is who's going to win, because I actually don't know. I know, like, a lot of people are saying, like, would imagine, like, oh, The Fiend, probably, that's actually a good shout, burning Randy Orton alive, but then again, you're not going to do that in a ring. You know what I mean? Unless you did, like, you know, they throw him into a box and set the box on fire or something like that. But I think, like, I actually think, The Fiend looks to be in some state. Maybe Randy puts an end to The Fiend. You ever know? Maybe punt kicks his head off its shoulders into row Z. Like, there you go, there's a souvenir, The Fiend's head. You know what I mean? Like, I'm thinking, like, it could be a Firefly Funhouse type affair with Orton. Like, you go back to, like, you could, because Orton has the same sort of career that Cena had, where you could go back to, like, you know what I mean, when he had hair and, like, he was like the, remember when he had that injury and he was like the news reporter, like, reporting on his injury, like, in the really early days?
The RKO injury update reports.
I think they could go back to that, go back to Evolution, the Legend Killer, like, go back to, like, but then, I don't know. I also think, like, this is why I'm actually really looking forward to it, because, like, I don't think they're going to do just, like, you know, there's no way they're just going to do, like, a normal, you know what I mean? I know when you say, like, in the ring, you don't mean, like, a normal, like, lockup, like, no, technical affair. Like Orton wins via roll-up. But, I think they're going to do...
They actually did an identical match to Katie Harvey versus Sami Zayn in OTT. I didn't see it coming. Nobody saw it coming. Crowd went mild.
It's like, I'm so intrigued. I don't know, like, what they're going to do, but they're going to do something. And I'm going to go with The Fiend to put away Orton. But I don't, like, yeah, well, he might kill him. He might kill him in the same way he, like, killed Cena. You know what I mean? Like, he could, I think it will be some sort of cinematic-y. Could maybe it'll be a mix. Maybe they'll start off in the ring and then they'll, like, fuck off under the ring into a new dimension or something. You know what I mean? Like, well, one thing I will say, I really, 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 really hope that when it's all said and done, because I do hate the fact that, like, Hogan is hosting Mania, but I love the Titus hosting Mania because of the role he played last year, where he was just staring into the camera when they went back to normal, and he's just sort of like, I hope that happens again. Whatever happens to Orton or The Fiend, I hope Titus O'Neil, when it's all said and done, is like, what the fuck?
Keith Hanley's thinking outside the box. There he goes. Fiend brings back Jindrak and a video airs of what Randy's life would have been like if he was never in Evolution.
That's like, but here's the thing, as you probably said that for a laugh, that's an actual shout. I actually think Jindrak could make an appearance. That's how crazy this whole fucking thing is. Like, because they mentioned it before. If they didn't mention it on WWE, like, TV, I wouldn't bother, but they definitely did mention it on WWE TV that, like, Jindrak was, like, Orton took his spot. So, like, we've seen how deep he goes. Like, yeah, we've seen, like, how deep he goes with the Cena stuff. when the fire, but then it's not, yeah, as you say, it's not advertised as a Firefly Funhouse, is it?
No.
So it probably won't be that then, but it's going to be something crazy though. Sean says Cena versus Orton in WrestleMania 38 in a purgatory match.
They just committed full like to Lucha Underground style. Love it.
Yeah.
Hey, you've been watching this feud. So where do you feel like watching it on the week to week basis? Like how do you feel it's going to play out?
It needs to go batshit. You know what I mean? No matter what kind of match it is, there needs to be like, I don't know who's going to win, because like Randy Orton could beat The Fiend and destroy The Fiend and free Alexa, because she's a wild card in this match as well, you know? But more than likely, The Fiend's going to win because of the way it's gone. And like Randy Orton hasn't had any time off in a long time. He's kind of someone that could go away for 6 months and make a big impact when he returns, because he doesn't really have anything to do after this. You know what I mean? There's like, where does he fit into the landscape? So that's why I don't think The Fiend winning is a bad thing and give him a break. So, but I just will be disappointed if it's a normal match. I have my head set up for something insane to happen, because that's what they've been building.
We've done it again. We've got ourselves hyped up for something which will never actually happen. Yeah. We've just talked our way into it where Mark Jindrak is back. And like, if I don't see Mark Jindrak now on Sunday, I'm going to be disappointed. And I have no reasonable reason to have that expectation, but I do now. Thank you, Keith Hanley.
But there's also, like, you know what I mean? Like, people always say about The Fiend, but like, The Fiend doesn't have to exist forever either. You know what I really want to see? We're just on a side note, bit of a tangent, but fuck it. Okay. Do you ever see Babyface Bray Wyatt the night he teamed with Roman Reigns against the League of Nations?
Oh, yes.
Where he was cool babyface. And it only lasted for a night, but he did absolute fucking... It looked deadly. It looked like... And he had like... I remember like Reigns hit a spear while he like did like a symbol with like a gun symbol with his finger, so like he shot the gun and Reigns hit the spear and it was like, oh, and they just scrapped it after one night, and it was the coolest thing they ever done with him. So I think there's infinite possibility. Like I know it's unlikely that they turn around after all they put into The Fiend and Alexa and all that stuff. It's unlikely that they turn around to drop it, but like I'd love to say I like, again, that's the last thing about wrestling. You live with like, you know, in the hope. Like when Eric Rowan was in WWE, the hope that he'd one day be champion. I live in the hope that Wyatt will one day return as like kill babyface Wyatt. And who knows, maybe Orton kicking The Fiend's head into the audience is how we get there.
The audience is the wild card as well, because like they can't technically do a Firefly Funhouse match
because
that played upon the fact that it was an empty arena. So they can't do a lot of the stunts that they did as well, because you have to imagine a lot of them, particularly The Fiend burning alive. They benefited from having editing and the options there. So it's an interesting one. How they actually play it off. No, but that's, if anything, could make it more intriguing, if only because it makes it into a shit show, as they did at Mania 33. It still makes it like interesting, not necessarily good. We'll see about that part.
Oh, but that's a good point you raised there. Like, even this is why the match is so intriguing, because like it's going to be something crazy, it's going to be something mad. Like, and as you say, like even if they did like a normal regular wrestling match, it'd be so shit that it's notably interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, even if it's, for better or for worse, it's not going to be boring. It's not going to be unnotable. You know what I mean? Something notable is going to happen. Like,
it'll be something we talk about in either Say Something Stupid or This Is Awesome.
Yeah.
This time next week, we'll be talking about this match. Another match I'd say we'll be talking about will be Asuka against Rhea Ripley. Again, like you'd say, oh, well, WrestleMania, Rhea's probably going to win. But this is one where I don't see it as obvious as Bianca winning against Sasha. I don't think this is a necessarily Rhea's to lose, although in the WrestleMania tradition it would go that way, but sometimes you have to break tradition. When Asuka herself wrestled in her first WrestleMania, we assumed there's no way Charlotte could win, and then she just did. So that could be what happens with Asuka here. Katie, which way do you see this match playing out?
Yeah, I was kind of like dead set on Rhea winning. But if Bianca is winning as well, it's kind of telling the same story twice, isn't it? Like, and it's more likely for Asuka to retain than Sasha to retain, I think. So, yeah, I suppose it could go either way. Like, we could have Charlotte getting involved as well. I think it's crazy she's not in Mania in any kind of... she's beaten both of these at WrestleMania as well. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So she could be like, I've beaten you both and I don't have a spot this year. So maybe there could be shenanigans. I don't know, but... Yeah, like I could see Asuka keeping this now.
Keen, what are you thinking?
I'm gonna go with Rhea Ripley. I don't think Rhea Ripley's gonna bottle it a second time, but Charlotte is an interesting, yeah, Charlotte's surely gonna be involved somewhere. I think, like, Charlotte, I can't believe Bayley's not in this anywhere either. Like, that's the thing about Mania. If it was any other show, you could say, like, yeah, they'll probably, like, you know what I mean, like, they probably just won't be there. But like with Mania, you're kind of like, oh, there has to be a role somewhere. But then maybe they do nothing on Mania night, and then it's made up for the following, like, Monday or Friday on SmackDown, where they get a massive, massive angle then afterwards. But I don't know. I think Charlotte, I don't know. I think I'm going to go with Rhea.
Okay. I'm going to blow your minds. I think Asuka retains. It's a really good match. Asuka retains. And then after the match, Asuka celebrating in the ring. And oh, then all we hear is...
I know what you're going to say.
Becky stands out on the stage and is just standing there pointing at the belt that she gave to Asuka and she never lost. And then that's how that match ends. And then it just cuts to black. We've just seen Becky Lynch. Tune into Raw the following night. There you go. I think that's going to be a thing. Because can Becky wrestle? Who knows? Like, we don't know the situation about that or anything like that. But can she stand?
And then she's got a kid that can back her up, interfere in the matches and all that as well. Unreal.
The baby just starts crying. And then, like, Asuka's like, oh, your baby. And she's like, it does it all the time. And then she just grabs her. amazing stuff. So that's I think Asuka's winning. I feel confident in that because the best Becky Asuka thing is right there. It's WrestleMania. Becky is back in play, at least for big moments. Speaking of big moments, the big match. Three people who over the past few years we thought we have said goodbye to. It's Roman Reigns, the Universal Champion. It's Edge. It's Daniel Bryan. And yet here, all three of them are in the main event of WrestleMania in what is sure to be a classic. We never talk about odds on this. Corbin Keane, it's fine. You don't need to freak out. I am going to talk about odds because I can. Because there is no difference in the bookies' odds for any of these three people. I would have thought when I looked at them today, because I'm putting together the prediction league, and I have to look at them, I would have thought that Roman Reigns was probably the least likely for the bookies, and that, like, you know, you're going, does Edge get his comeback win or does Daniel Bryan get the big babyface win? But no, they're sticking hard to any of these people could win. It is a dead heat. So the question just comes down to, in what I think will be a WrestleMania classic, and I think we all feel the same way and have kind of said as much over the past few weeks, who have you got? Corbin Keane.
Disclaimer, I'm awful at predictions. This could age like milk, but I don't see how Daniel Bryan has the slightest chance of winning this at all. Okay. I really don't see Bryan winning this. So between Reigns and Edge, Bryan being in the match completely changes the dynamic of this, because it means that Edge, like, if this is one-on-one, I'd say Reigns all day. But I think it means that Edge could walk out as champion without having to beat Reigns. But I'm going to go with Reigns. He's in his prime. He's the man right now. I don't think they'll have him lose the title. I don't think Reigns is gonna lose the title until Cesaro decides to take it off him. Or Big E. So I'm gonna go with Reigns. I think Reigns pins Daniel Bryan. And maybe they could have a one-on-one rematch then, Edge being like, hey, you didn't pin me or whatever the fuck, you know what I mean? I think I'm quite confident Reigns is going to come out as champion. But what's really gassed with this is that, like, if you turn around, like, a couple of years ago and said, this is the main event, like, imagine, like, when we were told about Edge and when we were told about Bryan and when we were told about, like, Reigns, and imagine saying, right, like, in a couple of years, like, all three will main event with a triple threat for the title. Like, it's deadly stuff. I think amazing. I'm going to go Reigns. And I hope so. I'm loving Roman Reigns. So I'm going to go with him.
Jimmy brings up, he's loving all the memes, inserting Bryan as the third man into historic one-on-ones. I'm loving it. It's a fantastic meme. Katie, who have you got?
I think Edge is pinning Daniel Bryan, so Reigns doesn't get pinned to lose the title. I think he leads into that ultimate opportunist gimmick again, because that was Edge at the core of it. He was always at his best as a bad guy, you know? So I think that's kind of like that sneaky way into being champion. And I still think it's a great WrestleMania moment to tell for years that Edge won the title on his WrestleMania comeback, you know what I mean? Well, no, I suppose he wrestled last year at WrestleMania, but, like, you know what I mean? It's a nice end to the story that can be twisted in the future. But right now, I think it can lead to that kind of him going back to the dark side.
He won his WrestleMania match last year, but he never got his WrestleMania moment in front of the fans. So that'd be what this is. The argument for Brian for me is quite simple. It's the only way we're ending WrestleMania on a completely happy note, because regardless of whether Edge is tweener or heel or whatever way you want to define it, and I like, this is kind of one of these storylines where it's taking advantage of the pandemic era and finally poising it as we're getting back into fans. It's the perfect match in one way, because WWE hasn't felt the need to declare who's a babyface or who's a heel. People act based on how their character would act, and it hasn't felt the need to confine into that kind of way. And now we're going back into a situation with fans where we're like, oh, how are fans going to react? You know what I mean? Are Metalingus going to be there playing Edge to the ring? Because that was the plan last year. Is that going to happen this year? Like, and in this case, are fans going to be like, yeah, whatever about what happened, Edge, fucking hell, good to see you, man. You know what I mean? Because they haven't, only one audience has really had a chance to do that in a match with the Royal Rumble, if you think about it. And that's last year's Royal Rumble, which he didn't win. Now he's coming in as the Rumble winner. Daniel Bryan, again, if you want, WWE is the babyface wins at the end of the day. Roman Reigns is, the argument for him is I don't feel like his title reign is nearly over. I feel there's so much juice. This could be one of the great 2-3 year title reigns. WWE, I know the pandemic has played a part in it, but when you look at NXT UK, everyone there has held their belts for, like, I think apart from the Heritage belt, which didn't exist before the pandemic, everyone there is like record title holders. But WWE are leaning into longer reigns. So I think Reigns could continue his title reign. Absolutely. I don't know. I really don't know. I love that. I'm gonna need to pass on this and
butler. Absolute butler. Pick one. Reigns, for me, like, I think Brian, I don't think like WrestleMania ending on a happy note is really as important as we sort of build it up to be in our heads. I think you've sold me when you say like Reigns could be one of the person to hold the title for 2-3 years. I don't think it'll be that long, but like, there's a possibility. Like, if anyone was to do it, you know what I mean? That's the way I'm thinking. Like, if anyone was to do that, it'd be somebody.
Here's my logic for a 2-3 year reign, okay? Like, he has to wrestle The Rock at WrestleMania. The head of the table, that's built for a match against The Rock. You know what I mean? That's literally what that storyline is. It's like, who could be at that table and actually say, no, wait, I think I'm the head? It's The Rock. That's what this storyline was, and probably what it was conceived as, but they just didn't know if they'd have fans, so they're like, they just punted onto next year. The Rock, that match has to happen at some stage.
Does that need a title though?
Not necessarily, but like, again, I think it should. I think that's it. Like, that's, it's part of the storyline. He's not the head of the table if he's not the champion, because he's not even the head of the WWE table, never mind his family table and all of this and that. But then I also think he needs to lose the belt at WrestleMania. I think he needs to have the next guy come up. And Reigns now is the guy. He's the John Cena of the past 10 years, where the next guy in line, the next star, is Reigns is the guy to put him over. Do you know what I mean? And again, he can do it through multiple Reigns. Like, I could see him losing here. Like, I could see any three of them winning. I'm going to pick Reigns. So I've talked myself into it. I'm going to pick Reigns, but I could easily change that by Friday. Are we all comfortable? Are we all happy with our picks?
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. Right, what we're going to do now is something we usually do on Ask Low Blows. However, our next episode of Ask Low Blows is at the WrestleMania party. And it'd be weird if we stopped the WrestleMania party halfway through and just decided to... Katie's stuck on mute. Sorry, Katie. I'll sort that out now. I was wondering, like, you put up the thumbs up a second ago and I'm like, I think she's just chilling. hold on. Sorry, this isn't letting me for some reason. And I'll still mute there. Okay, so this is something we usually do on Ask Low Blows, but like I said, it'd be weird to stop the WrestleMania party and be like, if you don't want to hear it, just leave and then come back to the party afterwards for the quiz. And so we're going to talk about it now. The Walking Dead. It was the series finale, so it's not something that we can just leave and talk about next week. And it was a big episode. Here's Negan was the episode. And the series finale to this mini series we've had, and we've had mixed opinions about and guys, if you don't want spoilers, by the way, we hope to see you at the WrestleMania party. We'll be back next week for Low Blows 300. Check it out. It's going to be a big show. But for those sticking around, Keen, I know you haven't been a fan of the character building episodes. This was a character building episode, but it was also a pretty big episode in Walking Dead lore. So I really want to know, did this turn you around? Was this the kind of character building episode that you could get into?
That's the first thing I was going to say is this what you mean when you say like a good character episode? Because like I've hated to see this miniseries. I thought it was boring. Like I could have watched anything else. Like, but I love this because I love Negan. I think yes, he pummeled Glenn's head in, but I think Maggie needs to stop being like such a big baby about it. Like, yeah, okay, right, your husband got murdered, right? Okay, like at the end of the day, Negan's a fucking laugh. You know what I mean? Just get to know him, like. and it was really, really cool seeing the origins of Lucille. And like what I loved, what I absolutely fucking loved was the inclusion of Laura, whose name I had to Google, the blonde savior in her part of the episode. Because I always wondered, like, where did that start for Negan? You know what I mean? Like, how did he build up the savior? It's like, I could actually watch a Negan spinoff and enjoy the shit out of it. And I never bother with spinoffs, you know what I mean? But I'd watch that, like, there's just, yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I don't know what to say.
here's another thing I want to know coming off the back of this. Katie Harvey, you have been holding strong in your anti-Negan camp as a huge Glenn fan. But this was an episode that you couldn't deny humanized Negan and kind of explained his motivations quite a lot. Are you still a Negan hater?
I'm still absolutely anti-Negan. Yes, humanized him. Humanize him as a bastard, you know what I mean? I did genuinely all the way through watching this was like to feel like, but what about Glenn? We can't forget about Glenn. And I love that the episode opened with Maggie and Herschel walking by to put that in your head as well, you know what I mean? Poor Abraham isn't getting the love and remembrance he deserves. But I did like that touch. So just so it's in the forefront of your mind, like why he's in this position. You know, it's because of his father and what he did to him. But I did love the episode. I thought it was very, very interesting. I still prefer the Aaron and Gabriel episode out with this like run of six episodes.
Okay.
But I did like it because I enjoyed seeing the fact that he was a bad person, then a good person, then a bad person, then a good person. I like that it wasn't very black and white. It wasn't like a Big Show heel turn, you know what I mean? It was like a little bit more nuanced, you know, like his kind of journey and showing that, yes, I can be capable of good, but I do have a darkness inside me. And right now my environment is forcing the darkness to come out instead. So like I thought it was a fantastic episode, and I thought like that's his real life wife in it as well.
Yeah.
So I thought that was
sweet.
It's his real wife. So I thought they played off each other so well, and I thought like you could see like genuine warmth between them. But I'm still anti-Negan. Still think he should have stayed in that forest.
Oh wait, I've got a question actually. What happened to the doctor that like?
See, this is the question. Like, again, a lot of people in the reaction I've seen are like, I just wanted to keep going and just go into the start of the Saviors. Just tell us how the Savior started. I think there's still juice in that story. They've never showed us how the Savior started. And again, now they've left us with a question. Because we know the Doctor's daughter ended up in the Saviors. So that's an open question. And that leads me to believe that I don't think we're going to get a spin-off series. I'd love it if we did also. But I think there's going to be another flashback episode.
Imagine he's still there and Alexandria just never got any TV time. Like, it's just, it's, like, he's grand. Everyone's got on great with him and nothing significant really happened. He's just there. Like,
you know,
Maggie's just, you know, that happened a long time ago. It's fine. I've got a new mini version now.
Do you know what really bothers me about this, though? Is the fact that Laura is the doctor's daughter. Laura obviously has some experience herself because she's been helping him on the small ball clinic. Alexandria is always fucking low on doctors, you know what I mean? Why was she not working as a doctor? What, like, I don't understand that.
Doctors die in The Walking Dead.
So she just pretended not to be one so she could stay alive?
I mean, maybe she just did one. Maybe she just did one, you know, in the background. Like, she just didn't hog the camera for it, you know what I mean? Just like, look, I'm just helping people sort of in the background.
They made such a big deal of bringing the doctor from... they made such a big deal though of bringing the doctor from Hilltop to the Savior's compound.
Yeah,
when she's a doctor.
Yeah.
Well, is she a doctor or was she just like a trainee?
But they kind of phrase it like this is a these doctors drive around helping people.
Well, who said that though? Because they probably just assumed she was a doctor, but she was really just there.
Negan said it at the start of the episode.
Yeah, because like we've only seen him treat people. Do you know what I mean?
I think it's a little bit fishy. So she just didn't learn this life-saving skill while driving around with her dad in the apocalypse.
That's not easy. But like, okay. Yeah, like, doctor, you have to go to college for like 8 years in ideal circumstances to be a doctor, right? Never mind, you're doing it in the apocalypse.
Enid picked it up fairly quickly from what I see, you know what I mean?
Like, maybe she was just talented.
For me, this was a top 5 episodes. Maybe top 10 at a push. But for me, this is one of my favorite episodes of The Walking Dead ever. An absolute return to form. I love, love, loved it. It explained why Negan is the way he is. He's human. He has self-destructive traits, and they come down to how he views himself. Do you know what I mean? Why did he become a dickhead before the apocalypse? Because he was a good person. He taught Jim. He loved teaching Jim. And then he lost his job doing what he thought was right in defending his wife. So he became an absolute dickhead. So he's a self-destructive person. He's almost like an addict, except he pushes his self-destructiveness out on other people and becomes just destructive. And it just made sense of everything Negan. And it made us actually believe, because to me, the Negan redemption story needed this. It needed us to understand, like, because there was always that question of, yeah, but what if he's just a dickhead? And while that built dramatic tension, it also didn't let us fully buy into the character, because it's like, oh, he just is a good guy now. And it's like, no, he actually is always a good guy, but his worst impulses come out when he's in an emotional state and when he faces a setback and he becomes a self-destructive or destructive person. And that's kind of what this explained and the bridge that it crossed. I loved his speech about, like, you know, we have consequences in the real world, and now the way the world is only based around what you're capable of. I loved that promo. It was peak Negan. It was just, and you could see it was the first proper Negan promo, but you can also see the bit of character development where he obviously worked on becoming that promo shit talker by like playing Gears of War with teenagers. You know what I mean? That's probably where he learned the shit talking. So now he's so good. He's this like badass, but also as well, you've got the nothing to lose. I loved the little bit of symbolism, like, you know, at the end where he knocked down the post, the letterbox that said Smith. So it turns out his name is just Negan Smith, which is so random, but like, he's losing that part. He's becoming just Negan. He's becoming Madonna or just Ronaldo, just a one named person. And an icon more than anything, which is how we met him when everyone was saying, I am Negan, I am Negan. I absolutely love this. It has me hyped for the new season. I watched The Talking Dead afterwards, as I have done during this mini run. And what an interesting insight I learned is, do you know the smile to Maggie towards the end?
Mm.
A lot of people were a bit upset with that, because they're like, you're after getting us on side with Negan, and there's no reason for you to antagonize Maggie. You have done her wrong. You've killed her husband. That apparently was a decision that he made on the day, that he was going to do one take where he looked at her and he just smiled. And he got her they asked him, explain the smile. And he's like, it's not that I'm antagonizing her. It's that I'm comfortable with myself. And I'm like, I'm back. I'm comfortable that I'm a good person, and that I've exercised my demons, and that I've made up for being wrong in the past. And if you want to kill me, that's fine. I accept that, but I'm going to make your life hard doing it. And it makes it so much more interesting than looking at Maggie and just kind of putting the head down or just staring at her. Do you know what I mean? It's like, come and get me. And it's like, it properly sets us up for the new season. It gives us something to watch for. And I don't know if Negan's going to make it, but I think he's going to, I think you will. I think Negan, if and when Negan dies, I think you're going to be a Negan guy by the end of it, Katie. I have every faith he's going to turn you by the end of it.
The hurt runs deep. I don't know about that. I think if he does die, it'd be like saving Herschel or something.
Yeah, I think whatever happens, I think he's saving Herschel. Yeah. And that's when he's going to turn you. He's getting you. Here's one thing that I want to check, though. That's kind of the thoughts. Katie, I wanted to check in with you. And Keen, you'll like this as well. Have you guys heard of Invincible?
No.
Okay, Katie in particular, look up the cast right now as I speak, and I'll give you the context, okay? Because Katie, like, this is your night sorted. You're going to, like, spend the rest of the night watching this, okay? It's on Amazon Prime. It's made by Robert Kirkman, who's the writer for The Walking Dead, okay? And it's a superhero thing. Keen, you may like it because it's by the same people who made The Walking Dead. But I think it's specifically made for Katie. Look at the entire cast.
I've already seen Steven Yeun. Yes. And then Seth Rogen is my dream man. I don't know if I've talked about that before. Holy shit. I love Zachary Quinto. Oh my God. Ezekiel.
Everyone is in it. It's amazing. Check it out, by the way, Amazon Prime Video, if you're looking for something new. There's only been 4 episodes. It's every Friday. So if you like Falcon and Winter Soldier and you're looking for something else to add to your Friday buzz, it's on there as well. It's a cartoon, but it's a superhero cartoon, and it's fucked up. It's messed up. It's proper apocalyptic Walking Dead style, but in, like, if that happened in an MCU movie, where it's messed up, and it has a lot of the same twists. Like, Robert Kirkman came up with a lot of the twists that kind of made The Walking Dead and hooked us to begin with, and he does that from the get-go in this show. It's really, really good. So there, check it out if you're...
I think I shouted too loud because Phil just walked in and went, Seth Rogen?
Have we got anything else to add on The Walking Dead or anything like that?
Oh, the next season soon. That's something I'm looking for very soon. Apparently, I googled it, and it's not official, but like it's a rumored June. So that is literally around. That's the shortest turnaround between seasons I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
That's why I don't mind like not being into the miniseries now, because it's like, well, fuck it, who cares? Like I've had full seasons that I haven't been into where like I've had to wait 6 months for the next one. You know what I mean? So, is what it is. Can't wait. Hope Eugene and Negan survive.
It's going to be fun. The WrestleMania, and then shortly after that, The Walking Dead. In the meantime, if you want to check out Invincible and catch up on that as well. But in the meantime, as far as us,
what's that? Just an ad for Raw there on Virgin Media 2, a TV show just like any other. Just an ad on my TV.
It's very strange. It is very strange. Okay, guys, in the meantime, we will see you this weekend. Saturday, Ask Low Blows and the Coup Table Quiz. And then, of course, WrestleMania night. We'll all watch it together. Sunday, the WrestleMania Rewind. If you haven't asked questions, get them in. If you haven't got tickets, eventbrite.ie. It's less than the price of a pint. And it is 2 nights of great entertainment. We will give you the WrestleMania feels, even if we can't be in Buskers together this year. In the meantime, we can't wait for it. I hope we've got you excited for it. But in the meantime, for Katie Harvey, for Corporate Keen, I've been Rick Nash, and that's the bottom line. As Lobo said so.